Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, August 6th, 2017. This is episode 1411. Enjoy. This episode of the Tech Guy is brought to you by Capterra. Capterra is a free and easy-to-use software comparison site with over 400 categories of business software to choose from and thousands of reviews from actual software users like you. Visit capterra.com/techguy today. And by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter the promo code TECHGUY to save 20% off any order. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk tech, as we do every weekend, Monday through Friday. I talk tech too, so I really should just say, as I do all the time. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number if you want to talk tech with me. Tech means, well, you know, anything with a chip in it. So computers, of course, the internet. Lately, a lot of smartphone conversations. Not so many smartwatch conversations. Although Apple says, Apple Watch is doing great. I do see more Apple Watches around than I have in the past. Seems like a lot of people are wearing them. And Apple says sales were up last quarter 50%, but they didn't say from what. So you don't really know what that means. Is it a million? Is it 2 million? Is it 100 million? Is it a billion? I don't know. Can't be a billion. It's going to be something less than a billion. We could talk about augmented reality. That's all the rage these days. Virtual reality was all the rage last year. That's so 2016. Augmented reality is the thing today. Somebody asked me the other day, old friend I hadn't seen in a while. I said, well, what's the latest? What's the hot tech? I hate that question. I get it all the time. Well, I'm the tech guy, right? So what's the hot tech? I don't know. It isn't virtual reality. I guess from the hype machine, if you looked at the, you know, tech press and all that, you'd say augmented reality and self-driving cars, neither of which are really taking off anytime soon. You know what I told him is, yeah, I think it's talking to your computer. I think it's voice technology. It's Amazon Echo and Google Assistant and Siri on the i platform and Cortana on the Windows platform. I think those are actually the most interesting kind of thing that's happening, at least. I think augmented reality has some potential. I was more bullish on it in the past. Then you've seen a lot of demos on YouTube for Apple's new AR kit, augmented reality kit. That's kind of an inside baseball term. But what kit is, in the Apple world, is it's a tool for programmers, for computer software designers to use to make it easier to use a technology. So they have WebKit, which is basically the basis for a web browser, and a programmer can write a web browser using WebKit. They have, you know, a lot of other kinds of kits. But ARKit is Apple showed off in June at their developer conference and say, well, you know, coming this fall, like in the next month or two, iOS 11 is going to have this built in. New iPhones are going to have hardware specific to this. And that's kind of tricky. You do need to have some significant hardware. Because you have to, for augmented reality or even virtual reality to work, you need to know a number of things. You need positioning in space, what they call 6 degrees of freedom. Which, ironically, is the name of my my indie punk band. 6 degrees of freedom would be left, right, backward and forward. That's four. I guess really that's two. Well, I don't know. Is that two or is that four? There's pitch, yaw, and roll, which if you're an astronaut or an airplane pilot, you'll understand is something else. Yaw, roll, pitch. You combine those together, you get 6 degrees. Maybe I'm not a complete expert in this. There's the XYZ axis and the pitch, yaw, and roll axis. Anyway, they become 6 degrees of freedom. But that's not all you need for augmented reality. That's what you need for virtual reality, because the entire world, if you're wearing a visor, is on those screens. You only need to know where somebody's head is in space. But when you get to augmented reality, you got to know more. You got to know about the world out there. This is why it's so hard to do. And Microsoft has a product, but they say it won't be out till 2019. 2019! That sounds like the future, doesn't it? It sounds like science fiction. In 2019, you can put this helmet called HoloLens on your head. And what augmented reality does is it superimposes computer imagery on the real world. And that's why it's hard. Because there's stuff in the real world. There's chairs, there's tables, there's the floor, there's the ceiling. And in order for you to superimpose objects on there as if they're in the real world, you have to understand them. You have to make a map of them. You have to know where the table is so an object can sit on it instead of just kind of floating in space. Furthermore, really complicated, you have to know when something's behind something. If you see an augmented reality demo where something is sitting on a table and then goes behind something, that's pretty good. I just read a very good article by an expert who says, by the way, there are about only 20 people in the world who know how to do this, and they're none of them working for Apple or Facebook or Google or anybody. They're working for NASA. They're working for the armed forces doing cruise missile design, Mars rovers. That's what they're doing. They're doing big stuff, not consumer-grade stuff. But the ideas are out there, and so Apple, and by the way, Google has something that's almost identical to this called Project Tango. Google's problem is there's a lot of different people make Android phones, and in order for this hardware to work with the 6 degrees of freedom plus the surface detection and surface hiding behind and all that stuff, in order for all of that to work, you have to have some specialized hardware, a lot of it, including multiple cameras, depth-sensing cameras, infrared cameras, all sorts of hardware. And Google can't really tell the people who make Android phones, well, look, guys, you got to put in $1,000 worth of hardware in that phone. So there are some Tango phones. In fact, I'm looking forward to getting one from the Zenfone from Asus, the Zenfone AR. It's the first one, I think, that's like a real phone. And it's a real phone, and it has all this stuff built into it. But it's still only, interestingly, $650, $700. So it's about priced like a normal Android phone. But that's why Apple has this kind of lead. It's not that they have a lead in technology, but they build the phones. So they can say, well, good news, the next iPhone will have all that stuff. Oh, and by the way, there's been leaks, and I suspect they come from Apple because they're preparing us. Oh, by the way, that phone's going to go over $1,000, just so you know. And what are you going to get? Well, it's not a visor you wear on your head. Remember, Microsoft doesn't have that ready till 2019. Maybe Apple's working on something like that, glasses you wear, something like that. It'll be your phone or your iPad, and you'll hold it up, and you'll look at the screen, and you'll see stuff on top of other stuff and behind other stuff and so forth. In fact, if you just, search on YouTube for AR kit, you'll find a bunch of demos. This article, very good article. I'll put a link in the show notes at techguylabs.com if you want to read it. I mean, it's pretty technical. But this article says don't ever trust a YouTube video of augmented reality, because the problem with augmented reality is it works, when it works, it's great, but it doesn't always work because it's guessing a lot of the time where stuff is and where surfaces are. And a lot of times you got the robot floating in the air. But of course, if you're making a YouTube video, you pick the times when it really works well. And that's why the demos look so much better than they might when you get them in December. Yeah, they say probably December before this phone is available. So with a lot of conversations about AR, I don't know if it's the next big thing. I mean, it's interesting. Now you have to think of uses for it. IKEA's got one. You hold the phone up in your room and you pick an IKEA piece of furniture and you can see what it would look like in your room. Anything else? No, that's it. Pokemon Go, you know, the game where the Pokemon appear. I turned that feature off. The Pokemon would appear in the real world. That was really, I turned it off. It slowed the machine down. I don't know. What do you think? Are you all excited? Are you all in on AR? I think just to be able to speak to an Amazon Echo and have it answer you is pretty cool. And that, to me, is the answer to my buddy's question. That's the technology I'm excited about. But we can talk about anything. 8888 Ask Leo. No, that's all right. That is it, though.
With a new school year upon us, a new line.
Well, I wasn't going to be able to do anything with it till then, anyway. But
it looked to me like you were trying to log in.
Earlier. I was playing with surfaces. So this is the new ThinkPad, much like the old ThinkPad. I'm thinking maybe, yeah. It's a lot smaller, but then with the. Yeah, I like ThinkPads. I'm now a ThinkPad fanboy.
Is that a light? That's actually a light?
Yeah. When it's charging, it lights up.
That's cool.
Yeah. The red eye of Lenovo staring at you. There's a Linux version called Deepin that is made in China. People are saying, why should I trust Chinese to make a Linux? And then I realized, well, it would be running on a Chinese laptop, so probably if the laptop's safe, I'm sure the Linux will be safe.
Is that just a vent there, or is that actually a thing?
That's what's a smart card reader. So in business, I don't know if there's any application for me. This is a business laptop. So if you had a smart card, like the Bloomberg Terminal smart card, it would unlock things. Yeah.
Oh.
I don't know of any other use. But look at that, full-size RJ45 Ethernet port, full-size Ethernet, two USB 3, Thunderbolt 3.
It's got C?
Type-C. Another USB 3. And then that's the proprietary charger, which I brought. But there's also you can also charge over the USB-C.
And it's SD card reader on the other side.
SD card reader and a SIM slot. Although I don't know if I bought the radio or not. It says WAN.
To have all that stuff in a thin package like that.
Yeah. This is a great laptop. It doesn't do like the Yoga does, but you can, I don't know what you would want to do that for, but you can do that.
Do you have a dock, or is the dock coming?
Dock is coming Monday. And see, it has and this is the other thing, is when not all the ThinkPads have these anymore. That's the dock connector. So you just. Yeah, I think, because then it has power. The nice thing is it has power, Ethernet, HDMI, so I don't have to do anything. But we'll see. Deepin is kind of nice. It's pretty. One thing that, so I used, I didn't try Deepin the distro. I did Deepin on Manjaro, which is an Arch, but the Deepin desktop environment. But the YubiKey didn't work on it. And there's something going on with HID, with the HID driver, and I didn't really want to spend a lot of time diagnosing that. But Deepin's pretty. That's the other thing, is I understand GNOME 3 so well, and I have all my little doohickeys in it. The model 470T470S. I foolishly bought an i7 in this, which I now recognize because of thermal control is a bad idea on this thing. But battery life is huge. Endless, I think. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah. Let's be grooving. There's the groovy Kim Schaffer.
Groovy.
Grooving. Is that the Rascals sing that? The little Rascals. You're a rascal.
I should call you a rat. 10 years of oldies radio.
I know. Oldies radio. Oldies radio. So, hello.
Good morning.
Good morning on a Sunday afternoon.
On a Sunday afternoon.
If that's not
afternoon.
Confusing. You have been here so many hours preparing people for the show.
I didn't even leave yesterday.
You just stayed all night. Yeah, we got a little camp bed for you, and you just stayed all night in the phone booth.
Yep.
And you have prepared for us a fine number of callers,
fine
I see.
A panel.
What'd you call them, a panel? Who on the panel? Which panelist should I talk to first?
How about Serge in San Diego thinking of dumping his iPhone for an Android and wants to know what that entails?
Ooh, I like it. Thank you, Kim. Hello, Serge.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm well. Why do you want to drop your iPhone? The creme de la creme of smartphones, they say.
I agree. I got the iPhone 3G, I think it was like 9 years ago, and I've had an iPhone ever since.
Wow.
Yeah, so I've been pretty loyal to Apple, but just recently I've been noticing, you know, more and more issues. Every time a new phone comes out, it's starting to last a lot less than how long it would last. A usual phone would last me about 2 years before I would upgrade. Now, I'm having a hard time hanging on to one after 6 months without...
Hardware damage or software? Hardware issues?
A combination of both. I'm very, I get a lot of network issues as an Uber driver.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of battery issues as well.
Yeah.
Because sometimes the phone overcharges. But one of my concerns is, am I going to be missing out on anything if I switch from the iPhone to a Galaxy S8?
That's an interesting question.
Switch work?
Well, not from the current iPhone, no. But from the next iPhone, maybe, but you know, it's hard to not fall for the Apple hype machine, and it's on, you know, full bore these days because, Apple will announce a new iPhone probably next month, probably about a month from now. And it's going to have, remember I was talking about that AR stuff. It's going to have that AR stuff. And I don't know. I mean, we don't really know. It might, who knows? I'll tell you what you lose, on an iPhone. You lose the headphone jack. Some people, that's a problem. Some people it's not. You have to buy a special dongle if you want to listen to audio on wired headphones and charge at the same time. That's kind of a pain. I think the iPhones are fairly fragile. I mean, all smartphones these days are, and most people put them in a case. Although if you're an Uber driver, you may not want a case because of overheating.
Yes.
I've seen Uber drivers and Lyft drivers with like rags on top of their phone, you know, hide it from the sun. Because you have to sit it right there, right?
Yeah, directly under the sun all day.
Yeah, that's probably why you're having issues with it. The other thing, it could be the carrier that's the connectivity issues. Don't necessarily blame the iPhone. I don't know if an S8 would be better. Now, the S8 is fragile, by the way. It's glass back and curved glass in the front, so it's probably just as fragile as the iPhone.
Okay.
It's powerful. It's very fast. The camera is excellent on the S8, but what it lacks is the two-lens system that Apple has on the iPhone, but only on the 7 Plus. I don't know if you use a Plus or not.
I'm actually on the iPhone SE right now.
Oh, well, in that case, an S8 would be a step up.
The totem pole.
Yeah, S8 would be a step up, but it's a lot bigger. But if you don't mind the size, I think the screens are better on Samsung phones because they use OLED screens, and Apple is still stuck with LCD, although rumor has it the next one will be an OLED.
What about as far as what I love with my computer? How does that work with Samsung? Am I still going to be able to get my text messages on my computer, or do I only have to use my phone now?
That's a tangled story. So the Apple Messages app is nice because you can do it on your desktop. You can do it on your phone. You can do it on an iPad. But what you can't do is do it on anything but an Apple device. So if you this is kind of a negative on Apple is that they've never made a version of Messages for any other platform but besides Apple. However, if you live in the Apple universe, it's great. Your friends kind of have to too because you can send them text messages, but you lose all those fancy features of Apple's messages. If you're on a Samsung, the Samsung Messenger and the Google Messenger that are kind of the defaults, neither of them have desktop solutions. There are third-party solutions like Mighty Text and Pushbullet that will let you do it on the desktop, but you have to add a third-party program, and it's not as good.
Yeah.
I use Google Hangouts, but that used to be the way to do it. Hangouts is a SMS messaging program, lots of capabilities that allowed you to use it on the desktop. But unless you're a Google Fi subscriber, their own phone service, you can't use that anymore on the desktop or for SMS messaging. So that's really a problem. So, but as far as all the other applications, Android or iOS doesn't matter on a Mac. It really doesn't. And on a PC, it's probably easier to use Android. Certainly, if you use Google services, Android will be very straightforward. Used to be you could say, oh, well, the apps aren't there on Android. Well, almost every big app is available on Android. Smaller apps, sometimes really cool apps come out on iPhone, sometimes first, sometimes only. But Android has a very good app store. I don't think that's a negative anymore. And there's some really – Android's a great phone for people who like to customize. You can't do much to an iPhone. You know, it's Apple's way or the highway. But on an Android device, a Samsung, you can customize everything, even down to the launcher. You can have a different – I don't use Google's launcher or Samsung's TouchWiz launcher. I use my own launcher, and I called Action Launcher. Completely changes the user interface for me in a much better way. It's a little – some people don't like it, but that's the point. You can really personalize your phone. It's more like a personal computer than it is a phone.
Okay.
So it's very tricky to say one's better than the other. There are pros and cons on each. I like having a headphone jack, for instance.
Yeah.
The Samsung S8 uses a physical home button with a physical front fingerprint reader. The S8 was the one that changed to the back, and I don't like the positioning of the fingerprint reader on the Galaxy S8. And the Note, apparently, the next Note 8 will have it too. It's right next to the camera. It's just badly placed. I don't like what they do there. So that might be an issue for you. If you have to use a fingerprint reader and you have it in a cradle in your car, you won't be able to reach, you know, easily reach behind it to unlock it. So that discourages fingerprint use on the S8. Camera on the S8 is superlative. Better than your iPhone SE for sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much like the question 10 years ago, Mac versus Windows.
Exactly. You know,
it's a personal choice. I like the customizability. If you're a fiddler, if you like to fiddle with settings and customize, there's nothing like Android. It's amazing. If you just want it to work simply and easily, and if you live in the Apple ecosystem, the iPhone is probably the better choice for people. So that I didn't help you at all, did I?
No, you did help me, actually, but I definitely have to go and see the phone in person.
You should try it.
Fingerprint reader.
Be careful, because you're going to fall in love with that screen. It's such a beautiful screen.
I might just have to buy one on the spot. No.
The fingerprint reader, I think, is very poor design, and I'm really disheartened to hear the rumor that Samsung's going to do it again with the Note 8. We'll know in a couple of weeks. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's another point. If you really want a big phone, sounds like you don't, because you have the SE, which is the smallest iPhone available. If you really want a big phone, the Note 8 comes out in a couple of weeks, on the 23rd.
The Note 8?
Yeah.
Should I be considering any other phones as well? Maybe the Google Pixel?
My personal preference is the Google Pixel. That's what I carry. Also okay. With a back fingerprint reader, but no. A better one. Yeah, I want a salad today. How about a Caesar with a little bit of chicken? Chicken Caesar.
I got some balsamic vinegar.
Hey, I'll take it. I was talking to our production assistant. He's going to go get me lunch. Sorry about that. Got a little distracted. That's because I haven't eaten anything since Friday.
Oh, wow.
I'm starving.
It's a good fast.
Yeah, I like it. I feel good. I feel much better when I don't eat than when I do. Anyway, I hope that helps. You're an Uber driver in San Diego? I might see you because when I'm in San Diego, I always use Uber.
Okay, look out for a blue Prius.
I will. All right, Serge, take care.
Thank you for your time. Have a good one.
My pleasure. Bye bye. Yeah, can you imagine that they're over $1,000 for the new iPhone? I mean, this Pixel XL was $850, I think. This iPhone, once I put 128 gigs, you know, I got the high end iPhone 7 Plus. That was almost $1,000. Actually, after tax, it was. So that's crazy. This very nice Lenovo laptop was only like $1,300. Crazy. Crazy, man. Crazy. Oh, I got to do an ad. What am I thinking? I got to talk to you about Capterra. Holy cow. Oh, this, and by the way, this is something you want to know about. This is a company that will save you a lot of time. When they came to us, they said, you got to advertise on the Tech Guy, because the number one question I get that I'm not able to answer is, I have a business and I need software for my business. Let's say I work in a doctor's office, and the doctor said I got to find some office management software. No, I haven't tried all the solutions out there. I can't give you credible advice on accounting software or web design software, on and on and on. But I know a place you can go. Don't Google it, because you're going to get a random set of results. Go to Capterra. Capterra, Capterra.com/tech guy. This is a directory, free and easy to use, and absolutely complete. They have 400 plus categories, thousands of products, and over 200,000 real reviews from real users. So when you go to Capterra, you're going to be able to look up everything from 360-degree feedback, that's the beginning of the alphabet, or A-B testing, to yoga studio. Hey, would you like some yoga studio management software? There's a ton of it. Look at that. But wait, there's more. Maybe you want to filter results. I only want to see 4-star ratings. I want to see something that supports a studio of 2 to 9 people. Do you want it web-based or installed? Do you check these boxes? Do you need class scheduling? Yeah. Staff management? Sure. Let's filter the results. Now I've filtered it down to just those 13 products that have the features you must have. And then look here at the bottom. When you add to compare, let's say I want to compare Bagaro to Zen Planner to Glowfox to Fitly. Those are the now I can get a chart. This is, and by the way, did I say this is free? All free, no sign up. I just walked in the door, and here's the comparison. Everything you need to know, what it runs on, screenshots. Best of all, customer reviews. Hundreds of thousands of customer reviews from actual users, just like you, verified users. Capterra is the best resource. You could call the Tech Guy. You could Google it, but better go to Capterra.com/Tech Guy. Join the millions of people who use it every single month. Capterra.com/Tech Guy. If you're looking for business software in your medical practice, CRM, e-commerce, help desk, performance appraisal, church software, this is the place to go. Capterra.com/Tech Guy. Thank him so much for making the Tech Guy podcast possible. Yeah, JC Techie, I like the OnePlus 5. I'm not crazy about the camera. And I do feel like that it's a mistake at this point to buy a phone with a bezel. Starting this fall, all the phones will be bezel-less. Lollipop 5.1, the newest OS from Android. That's why you don't buy phones on QVC. Right there. Now, the Prius, his Prius might have Android Auto or... anything that has Android Auto probably has CarPlay as well, Apple's solution. I can make Skype calls. I can make, VoIP calls, sure. And with Hangouts, when somebody calls my Pixel, when somebody calls my Google phone, this rings and I can answer it. It's got very nice array mics, so the audio quality is quite good. Yeah, they dropped the price on the Pixel, but it's also going to be replaced soon. These things are great. Gosh, they're nice. Yeah, I got 24 gigs of RAM, which is nice. That's one of the reasons I got a T-Series, not an X1 Carbon. 24 gigs of RAM. I shouldn't have gotten the i7, as it turns out, because of thermal gating. Never gets to its high speed. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Phone number, if you want to talk about technology, is 8888-ASK-LEO. I love helping people spend money. So that, buying advice, we're getting up to that time when you're kind of getting ready to buy that back to school computer, whether it's for a high schooler or a college kid. We could talk about that. I buy a lot of computers, so I have some experience there, but a lot of phones too. It's my job. That's what I tell my wife. It's my job. Actually, she's very supportive given how much stuff I have. My daughter broke her iPhone last night, and she's having trouble getting it fixed. They sent it in. She brought it to the Apple store. They said, we're going to have to send this in. Send it in? Well, how long is that going to take? I don't know. So she said, I need a phone. I said, well, good news, honey, because I got a drawer full of phones. Just went, open the drawer. What would you like? Pick a phone, any phone. The website where we put all the things I mention on this show, except for that, I'm not going to put that there, but anything else, you know, links to products, articles, stories, information, answers to your questions are all at techguylabs.com. And I say that not because I'm trying to make money on it. We don't charge you for access to it. I know some shows, you know, the website is special. I should probably, but I don't. Yeah, kind of, I like that old idea of the web being free and open. Anybody can go there, and it's 24/7, techguylabs.com. You'll also find a link to our chat room, which is a lot of fun. Several hundred people in there kind of talking like the kids in the back of the class. We also, that's at irc.twit.tv. And we also have, audio of the show after the fact, video, all that stuff. TechGuyLabs.com. 8888 Ask Leo. And we go on to Carrie in Hermosa Beach, California. Hi, Carrie.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing okay. If my computers would be good to me, but they're not.
So they're always bad. You know, it's like having computers is like having a little puppy.
Yes, it is.
It's adorable until it, you know, poops on the rug. And then, well, you got to clean up the mess. So what messes do you have today?
I have two messes. Yesterday I turned on the laptop that we have. And my letter G and my letter H failed to work.
I couldn't log in to my account. They're right next to each other, which makes me think there's something going on physically with that keyboard.
Okay.
So a couple of things you could do. You don't have lying around just one of your old keyboards.
No, I don't. But what we did, because I'm desperate, because I use this for work and I needed it. So we went out and bought a plug-in one so that I could use it.
Perfect. Like a $5 keyboard. They're not expensive. Plug it into the USB port. It should work. And the G and H work fine on that one?
Yes.
All right. So there's something physically wrong. Now, is this a laptop? I forgot.
It is a laptop.
It's a laptop.
It's a Dell. It's about 2 years old.
Okay. So the first thing to do, and you can do this yourself, you can, on laptops, let me look at my Dell just to make sure. I have a Dell XPS 13 here. Let me just make sure. But most laptops, you can pry off the keycaps. So don't do it gently, and make sure no springs pop out or anything. But these days they don't usually have any springs to pop out. But you can use a little screwdriver or something. Just pop this G and H off and see if there's some schmutz in there.
Okay.
Some belly button lint or something. That's not unusual.
No, it's not. We have a cat who sits here all the time above.
Yeah, cat hair. Perfect. Now, you didn't spill anything into it, did you?
No.
No. Okay. So probably it's just lint or dust. So pry those off. You'll see beneath it, and you can blow it out or brush it out. Don't be too aggressive. Most of the time, and I'm sure this is true for Dell, there's a soft plastic dome underneath the key, and there's no those. You just brush it off or make sure there's no bread in there or anything like that.
Awesome.
Just see if that does it. We know that the everything's okay because you can use that plug-in keyboard. So it's just something wrong. And worst case, which Dell is this? What kind is it?
Oh, gosh. My husband.
It's all right. Don't worry about it.
But I can't remember.
A lot of the Dells, like I'm looking at this one, you to replace the keyboard, you'd have to give it to Dell. They'd have to take the whole thing apart.
This particular computer has been a problem since the day we received it, and I've already been back to Dell once, and then we had to fight to have that happen.
That's sad. You shouldn't. It sounds like you got maybe a little bit of a lemon. Yeah, because 2 years old, the keyboard shouldn't fail. But it might just be a little cat hair.
That might be. But the next question I had was about my Lenovo Yoga 2 tablet, because I don't use it as much as I used to because it's too hard for me to read on a daily, all-day basis. And I went to turn it on yesterday when I couldn't use this one, and it wouldn't connect to the internet. It said the adapter wasn't working.
Is there an adapter?
There's an adapter.
It's wireless, right? It's Wi-Fi, right?
Yes, it is.
Adapter?
BIOS. Yeah.
The adapter's not working. Well, it sounds confused. Of course, the first thing to do is turn it off, all the way off, not just the screen off, but press and hold the on-off button until it turns itself off.
Oh, we did that.
Yeah, and it came on, and it still says the adapter's messed up, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Little brat. It's been a brat.
What could that be? It's a Android tablet, or is it Windows?
It's Windows.
Windows.
Huh. Yeah. That's Windows 7, not 10, but...
7, yeah. Yeah, a couple of things. You know, this gets into an area you may or may not want to get into, Windows troubleshooting. Oh, what fun.
Yeah.
So probably what I would do is I would go into the device manager. And I'm not, if it's Windows 8 or 10, that's, you know, you can just do the Windows key X. On Windows key, on Windows 7, you have to go open, you know, about the computer and go to properties. But you want to go to the device manager. And the device manager is a list of all the hardware in the computer. Actually, you can just hit, come to think of it, on Windows 7, just hit the Windows key and start typing DEVIC, and it should pop up. Then you hit return.
Type what?
Device, DEVICE. And when you see device manager, hit return. Mm-hmm. It's just a shortcut. That's a very useful Windows shortcut. I'm surprised so few people know it. If you tap the Windows key and start typing the program or document you want to open or control panel, and then hit return, once you see it, it'll pop up. It's a very quick way to... That's how the only way I run programs these days. I don't click on icons or anything. Anyway, once you get the device manager, that's a list of all the hardware. First thing to do is to look in the network hardware section, the wireless section, and see if there's any X's or exclamation marks, any indication that there's a problem with a device.
Mm-hmm.
If you see that, that's probably going to be the device you're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the wireless networking device. If you don't see one, find the wireless networking device. It'd probably be an Intel. I would guess it's going to be an Intel device. And you can just delete it by pressing the back key and then restart the machine. And what this does is it just reloads the device driver. And sometimes that's enough to fix this.
What I have here is network adapters, a whole dang list of them.
Yeah, there's a whole dang list of them. But do they have any X's or red exclamation marks or yellow X's or
anything?
Nope. That means the machine thinks they're all working.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's a good sign. Before I go to any more surgery, there is a Wi-Fi on-off switch on these laptops that you could turn off. It's an airport mode. Well, I'm not sure where it is, but it's probably on the function key row. Look for a radio transmission tower. Once you see that, press and hold the function button and hit that, and that might turn it on again. And that could be as simple as that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hold on a sec. We're not done. I'm not done with you. This is one of those long, drawn-out Windows fixing things. Do you see in the system... So at the bottom of the screen, there's that taskbar. And on the right, we have a bunch of little icons. And,
yes.
And you're looking for the Wi-Fi icon. Do you know what that looks like? It looks like...
Well, it has little bars in it, right?
Yeah, little bars in it.
It's black.
Is it grayed out like you can't, like it's not? So click on it.
Well, I did, and I can see that my Wi-Fi is connected. You know what it is? I just see the airplane mode is on. So
there you go.
Okay, wait a minute. That says, okay, now it was on, and now I turned it off, which is what you want it to be off, right?
You know what? This is the most confusing button in the world. If it doesn't say on, it's off. Just keep.
Yeah.
This is the worst design ever. Thank you, Microsoft. It's completely unclear. But what you will see is the name in that list of connections. You'll see the name of your Wi-Fi access point. It'll say connected.
And I have that, and I told it to connect.
Does it say connected?
It says no. It says connect automatically, and when I click connect,
it's not connecting.
It says checking, and then it says cannot connect.
Yeah. So maybe the password is wrong or changed? Did you change your Wi-Fi lately?
No, we didn't actually because it's too complicated.
So in that list, I'm looking at Windows 10, unfortunately. I'm trying to remember Windows 7. I think there is a network and internet settings item.
Network and internet settings. Okay.
We're going to go there.
I'm looking.
You can also hit Windows key type network.
I can? Windows key network?
Windows key type network settings. We want to go to the network and internet settings control panel is what we're trying to do here. And we want to see what it says as far as your situation.
Network and sharing center connect to a network?
Yeah, go to the network. Yeah. So you're not connected. We're trying to figure out why you're not connected. So that's
yeah, because it's in the control panel on this, but I just typed in network and
yeah.
It came up on
network and sharing center, right? Yep.
Yes.
So it you see the connections. Look at your wireless network connection and select connect. Make sure it's not disabled.
Let me see. It says view your basic network information. Then it says set up a new connection network. It says currently not connected.
Right. So, well, that's why you're not getting the internet. Now, it's possible.
Well, I don't know how to connect to
I know. It's possible the Lenovo's hardware is damaged.
Uh-huh.
But maybe it's just usually it's just software settings. So try connecting to your Wi-Fi. Not create a network, but join a network. Thank you.
Well, what I did is I clicked on another thing down here at the bottom. It said Intel Pro Set Wireless 2.
Yeah, that'll work too.
So I connected to that, and it says, do you want to allow this to make changes? I said, yes. And then it says, import
oh boy.
The profile.
Yeah. The problem is you have two Wi-Fi tools. It's another fun thing about Windows. I got to run, unfortunately.
Okay.
I can't help you any further. I wish I could. Hey, ho, let's go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, Ask Leo. I'll spend a little more time on the air with Carrie in Hermosa Beach. She's got a Lenovo Yoga that's not online. And we went and we looked at her network settings on Windows 7, and yeah, sure enough, it's not connected. So you need to right-click on that network, your network, and forget it. Say, I don't want it, forget it, and then click on it again, and it'll pop up the password dialog and the login dialog, and you should try logging in again. If it does not pop it up, but I know it's working because it can see it, so I know your network's working. I think what we want to do is forget your current Wi-Fi settings and start over. Make sure you got that password right. I'm going to guess that's the solution here. Moving from Carrie to Jerry in Torrance, California. Hi, Jerry.
Hey, Leo. Long time viewer, short time caller.
Welcome. Nice to have you.
I had a problem with the Windows 10 installation on my Dell Latitude laptop. It failed to resume from sleep. And when it did come up, it said, hey, we failed to resume. Would you like me to fix that?
Oh, yeah? Yeah, try fixing that. What did it do then?
Well, it erased everything on the hard drive except an empty folder called Windows. It erased everything.
Well, you wouldn't see an empty folder if Windows was gone. So no. Windows is still there. You're seeing something. You're in Windows, right?
It wouldn't go any further than that, though.
Actually what really has happened here is that the hard drive is corrupted. These things happen. Hard drives are the first thing to go bad on a system.
Uh-huh.
So that's what it really sounds like. You're booting into Windows, though, because you have the Windows. You have Windows, right?
Well, it started. It did after it went to instead of repairing it, it said restore. Then it went into restore, and then it literally erased everything. The hard drive, I immediately pulled it out and then went back. I put a different hard drive in and put Windows 7 Pro back on, which is what the computer came with. Mm-hmm. Now, my question is it possible to utilize some inexpensive software that would try to recover some of the data?
Yeah, so you that's good. So you did, in fact, decide that hard drive had a problem, which I think you're accurate. Depends on what the issue is. Chances are, if you got an inexpensive USB adapter for that old drive and connected it to the USB port on your computer, you would see something. You might even see things that you wanted. Recovery does not normally wipe the drive without asking you a bunch of times. Recovery usually just fixes the problem.
Well, I thought so, too. You know, I've had, in Windows 7 Pro, I've had occasion for to fail to recover from sleep. And instead of doing anything, it just says, well, I'll forget all that data I'm looking for. We'll just go ahead and boot in it. And it did that. It worked fine. This time, it didn't do that.
I don't think you're sleeping. I think you're hibernating.
Well, yeah, but hibernate. I'm kind
a
of
big difference.
That way.
There's a big difference. So yeah. Sleeping just doesn't do anything. It keeps the memory refreshed. Doesn't go into quite as low a power mode, but it keeps the memory refreshed, and you just open up the lid and you're back to where you started. Hibernating really is shutting the computer down with one exception. You're saving the contents of memory to the hard drive, and then when you turn the computer on again, it loads up that contents of memory so it can continue where it left off. It's a slower process, and it involves considerable writing to the hard drive, as much as you have RAM. You had 8 gigs of RAM, it's going to write an 8 gig file. So I suspect that's what's happening, and I think your hard drive is corrupted. So the issue is, how is it corrupted? A physical problem with a hard drive is very hard to fix. That's when you go to those guys in the bunny suits with the specially climate-controlled labs, and you spend thousands of dollars. It's probably not what the problem is. Much more common, you get software errors. So there are a number of ways to recover, depending on where the error lives. If it's merely bad sectors, there's a program called SpinWrite. Unfortunately, pretty expensive. It's as much as a new hard drive. It's about $90. But SpinWrite, written by my friend Steve Gibson, goes through sector by sector, looks to see if it can read the sector. If it can, even if it's hard to read, sometimes it will have to try many times, it'll relocate it and mark that sector bad. So it eliminates all, it recovers whatever it can, and it's better than the operating system at recovering the data, and then marks the hard-to-read sectors bad. Usually that's enough to make the drive completely usable again. All drives have bad sectors. You're just adding a few to the bad sector table. That's a very low-level error. But then there are higher-level errors. The operating system may have corrupted the catalog that tells it where files are. That's what it sounds like, by the way. In which case, all the files are still there. It's just the catalog. It's as if you went into a library and threw the card catalog up in the air and then said, well, there's no books here. Of course there's books there. You just can't find them. So that would be software that lets you recover those files. That's at a higher level. It operates at the level of the file system. So SpinWrite's below the file system. But programs, and there's a free one that I always recommend called Recuva, R-E-C-U-V-A.
Okay.
And that you can run on the drive. So what you want to do is get that drive in a USB enclosure and run Recuva on it and see if it sees all your files. I bet it will.
Excellent.
All right.
Perfect. Can I offer you a thank you?
You can.
A while back, you recommended I use Apple's FaceTime for a phone call from Australia.
Yeah.
And it worked perfectly.
Oh, good.
Almost zero lag time between the conversations, and all. Once we figured out the time change between Los Angeles and Australia, it worked perfect.
Which is significant. Hey, I'm glad that worked for you. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it, and good luck getting that drive back.
Thanks, Leo.
Yep. Company called NewerTech, NewerTech, makes a $40 emergency USB drive connection tool that I really like. I've recommended it many times. We'll put a link in the show notes to it. If you kind of mess around with stuff a lot, you probably should have this. They call it their universal drive adapter. It's not for long-term use because your drive will be out with the electronics exposed and everything. But it'll connect to a laptop or a desktop drive. It'll basically turn it into a USB drive so you can recover it. They call it the Swiss Army knife of disk connectivity, And I think anybody who works with drives, and certainly any repair shop will have this. They'll also probably have SpinRite, and they'll probably have tools like Recova. They may not use Recova specifically, but they'll have tools like Recova that work this way. Hard drives fail in a variety of ways. Again, a hardware failure, that's tough. It's going to be hard to fix. But a software failure, with the right tool, you can often get most of your data back, if not all of your data. Got about a minute left. Let's see if we can help Brian. He's in Huntsville, Ontario, Canada. Hi, Brian.
Hello. How are you doing, Neil?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I have a question. It'll probably be pretty quick. I have my internet connection on my main floor in my living room with a Wi-Fi DSL modem.
Yep.
And I have some devices in the lower level that are Ethernet. And I can't very easily run a cable from upstairs to down. It just won't work at this house.
Yes.
So what I'd like is some kind of box in the basement which will talk Wi-Fi to the router.
Yeah.
And every day's device can see every other device.
So the thing you're going to look up is power line networking. That allows you to use your power lines in the house as Ethernet. It's not as fast as a real Ethernet connection, but if you've got an Ethernet, a hardwired device that needs Ethernet, this is great. TP-Link makes them. They're inexpensive. There are other devices like the mesh routers from Eero and Plume and others that also have Ethernet connections in the remote units. So that's another way to do it. But just go to TP-Link, get their power line networking. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I had to rush through that, but I hope I didn't misunderstand the question, but we're still on. So you have hardwired devices that want hardwire, but they're not near the router.
That's right.
So basically, so there's a couple of things you can do. There are Wi-Fi bridges. That's what the Plume is, for instance. Plume is a mesh solution. You put one Plume on your router, and then you put Plumes in the other rooms you want Wi-Fi, and it's kind of a Wi-Fi router on steroids. But every Plume has an Ethernet jack on it, and can be plugged into as an Ethernet. So like our TV, I want it to be Ethernet, not Wi-Fi, so I plug it into a Plume. It is Wi-Fi.
Could I put one of these devices down there and then an Ethernet switch so I can connect multiple devices to that one Plume?
Yeah. But you might, I think you might get better results with power line networking.
Okay.
And that's cheaper. So the Plume is a fairly hefty investment because you got to get like a bunch of Plumes and they're 50 to 70 bucks each. If you go to TP-Link and look at their, they have basically what is it's a Wi-Fi bridge, a power line bridge. So you'll plug your router, one of the ports on your router, into the TP-Link base unit, which you then plug into the wall. It's going to then use the electrical wiring, and there's Ethernet basically on all of the electrical wires. On the end where you want an Ethernet connection, you plug in the other adapter into the wall, and you can get Ethernet, you can get Wi-Fi, you can get both. So it's also going to be a Wi-Fi extender.
Yeah, right. Okay, great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
My son listens to you religiously. He just loves the show.
Oh, that's nice. What's his name?
Tim.
Tim, give Tim my regards.
Okay.
All right.
He's listening, actually.
Hey, it's Tim or Jim? Tablet. Tim.
So anyway, but thank you very much.
Hey, nice to see
you. Here, and also what you do on Twitter as well.
Oh, thank you. I'm very lucky to get to do this. It's not even work. Have a great one.
Have a good day.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We'll have more of the Tech Guy Show in just a bit, but first, a word from our sponsor. You know what? Where are my keys, I may ask? Fortunately, I know exactly where they are. They're right here, and I know because, well, they're right here, but also because I've got the tracker. the tracker keeps me from... Wait a minute, I've lost my tracker. Now I really do need to know where my keys are. I guess I took the house keys off. The tracker is awesome. It's a little Bluetooth device, about the size of a quarter. That's the Tracker Bravo, made of anodized aluminum. Oh, I know what I could do. I could just look on my phone, see where my keys are. It pairs with your phone. You can pair up to 10 trackers with your phone. Then your phone tells you where it's last seen the device. It's just awesome. Tracker is small enough to put around a dog's neck. Let's see. Oh, no, my keys are here, it says. Let's just see real quickly. They actually have the new Tracker Pixel, which is really, really cool. It has LEDs, so when you ping it, it will light up, which helps you find stuff in cracks and sofas and under couches and things like that. It's also a little bit smaller The Tracker Bravo is engravable. Looks like I left my keys at the office. Oh, good. So they're here. It's kind of, you know, you're probably familiar with this technology. It's like Find My iPhone, except that you can put it on keys, bikes, wallets, luggage, pets, anywhere. Pair it up with your smartphone. Now, if I want to figure out where my keys are, I could press this button here on the Tracker app. It'll make, there it is. I hear it. A 90 decibel. Can you hear that sound? Which makes it very easy to find. And this is a Tracker Pixel, so it will also light up. Now, another thing you can do is set up what we call separation alerts. So if I leave my keys behind, my phone will start beeping at me. If I leave my phone behind, my keys will start beeping at me. And the Tracker has a little button I can press that will make my phone make a sound. I can customize that sound, even if it's silenced. So never lose your phone, never lose your keys, never lose your remote, never lose your, well, I can go on and on. Anything you can put a tracker on, you can keep track of. Tracker now has family sharing, which means not only can I pair 10 trackers to this phone, but I can also pair it to my wife's phone so she can help me find stuff. Tracker means you won't lose anything ever again. And Tracker Pixel is the lightest, smallest, beautifulest Bluetooth tracking device on the market. I know it's here somewhere. Let me go find it. Oh, you know what? I lost it in my briefcase. Does it ever happen to you? I wonder why. It's here somewhere. Look at all this crap.
It's in there.
Oh, there it is. It wasn't in my briefcase at all. This dramatization provided by the Tracker. Never again lose anything. Thank you. This is the Tracker. It wasn't. It was in my drawer. I took it off for the ad. This is the Tracker Pixel. I really like this thing. Actually, I should do it one more time so you can see. Wait a minute, let me just show you the light up action. Because that should have helped me find it. See how that lights up? Isn't that cool? Now, one nice thing about all Tracker devices, including the Tracker Bravo and this new Tracker Pixel, replaceable batteries. So if you have a Tracker, unlike some of these other Bluetooth trackers where when the battery dies, you throw the thing out. These are Bluetooth LE. They don't use much power. Of course, it's dependent on what features you turn on. If you turn on the separation alerts, it's going to go through power a little bit faster. So, I would say I get about 8 months. I replace the batteries every month. But it's easy. You just pop it open, put a new battery in, and you're good to go. Plus, with the Tracker, you have the world's largest crowd location network in the world. That means 4.5 million trackers are out there. And anytime somebody with the Tracker software on their phone walks by your tracker, it'll ping you saying, hey, we just saw your tracker. It's in Moscow or wherever. So I can go on and on, but I want you to go to thetracker.com. Actually, the hardest thing to find today will be the website, thetracker, thetracker.com. And pick out a bunch of trackers. You can get the Tracker Pixel, the Tracker Bravo. You can engrave the Bravo. They even have UV LED printing, which looks very nice. We have some Bravos with our album art on them and stuff like that somewhere around here. I can't. You know what? I'm gonna attach the Tracker Bravo to my brain because I can't. I think I've lost my mind. TheTracker.com. Load up your basket and then on the way out, use the promo code TECHGUY. You take 20% off the entire thing. That is a great deal. I know you've been wanting one of these. Get a few. And they make, by the way, great gifts, too. The Tracker. You got a kid going off to college? Put it on their socks. Put it on everything. TheTracker.com. Use the promo code TECHGUY for 20% off. We thank them so much for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Now I'm going to put all this crap away. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and augmented reality and virtual reality and real reality. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Now, that's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or, as you just heard, we get calls from Canada, too, and that's toll-free there. We actually get calls from all over the world thanks to the internet. But you'll need to use the internet to call that number if you're outside of the U.S. or Canada. We also have a chat room, which is just a great place to go if you want to kind of chat about what we're talking about and get feedback. And a lot of times people who call the show go back into the chat room afterwards and get some additional information and so forth. That's irc.twit.tv, irc.twit.tv. And you can also go to our website, techguylabs.com. And that has lots more information. The show's there, audio and video after the fact, and all that stuff. TechGuyLabs.com. Is your drone spying on you? I thought this was interesting. For a long time, we've bought and talked about and recommended drones, quadcopters from a company called DJI. They make really, the best kind of relatively affordable ones. I think they're higher-end professional ones, but for people who are doing, a lot of professionals use the DJI Phantom and these other drones. They're very, very good. What I didn't realize, which is kind of done of me, is that DJI actually stands for Dajiang Innovation Corporation. It's a Chinese company. I didn't know that. I mean, everything's made in China, but I just assumed it was an American company making their stuff in China. And yesterday, actually it was earlier this week, the Department of the Army said discontinue use of DJI Corporation unmanned aircraft systems, aka drones. The Army has decided not to use these anymore because they're from China. Due to increased awareness of cyber vulnerabilities associated with DJI products, it is directed that the U.S. Army halt all use of all DJI products. Drones, electrical equipment, software, flight computers, cameras, radios, batteries, speed controllers, GPS units, handheld control stations, or devices with DJI software applications installed. Direction: cease all use, uninstall all DJI applications, remove all batteries, storage media from devices, and secure equipment for follow-on direction. They said everything, but and then we'll come along and blow it up. What? The Army Research Lab and the U.S. Navy have concluded that there are operational risks. Now, I understand that our armed forces have to go an extra mile, more than any of us, any consumer would have to go to, because they're doing stuff that they don't want the enemy or some foreign power to know about. I understand that. DJI's public relations manager said, "We are surprised and disappointed to read reports of the U.S. Army's unprompted restriction on DJI drones, as we were not consulted during this decision. We are happy to work directly with any organization, including the U.S. Army, that has concerns about our management of cyber issues." So what would be the threat, you might ask? Well, these drones have very sophisticated guidance systems, as you know. That's what makes them flyable. You know, they're much easier for humans to fly than, a quadcopter has any right to be, including not only inertial guidance, but GPS. They could conceivably be making maps of the areas they fly over and, I guess, connecting back to the internet. They're often controlled by internet-connected devices like tablets and phones. I guess it could be used to kind of map. You have to figure, well, the Army must know something. But there is also a little bit of paranoia going on. You may remember the Department of Commerce a couple of years ago said that nobody in government should use a Huawei or ZTE phone because those companies were partially owned, at least, by the Chinese military. And just the other day, Amazon stopped selling phones from a Chinese company called Blue, BLU. I think they're Chinese, because of spyware, allegedly, on the Blue phones. The Blue phones, by the way, are back on Amazon, all but one. And Amazon didn't exactly apologize, nor did they say it was a false alarm. But they say, well, Blue has reassured us that there's nothing nefarious going on. There's a certain amount of paranoia. And I want, you know, the Army knows what it's doing. I'm not saying the Army should. But the question is, should we now worry as consumers about using DJI drones? And I don't think so. I should point out that almost everything you use, from your laptop to your phone to your microwave oven, is made in China. And there's plenty of opportunity, if the Chinese authorities wanted to put nefarious stuff on there, to do that before it's shipped to the U.S. We don't know what happens at night in those big factories. Look around you. Almost everything you wear. Well, I guess your shirt isn't going to report back to Chinese authorities on you, but all your electronics pretty much are made in China. Some are made in Taiwan, some are made in Korea, some are made in the Philippines, but a lot of them are made in China. And I don't know if you pay attention to that or worry about it. The other night I was looking at a Linux distribution. You know, I like Linux. It's the free operating system. I love it, frankly. I think it's the best operating system out there. Better than Windows and Mac? Yes, indeed. But I don't proselytize, but I'm just a personal opinion. And I was looking at a distribution that comes from mainland China. And in fact, I think is, probably heavily subsidized by the Chinese government. And somebody on the forums there said, well, why should I use software from China? And somebody made some very good points. First of all, it's open source software. So everything it does can be examined. Not that somebody's examining it, but everything it does can be examined. In this case, it probably is being examined by the NSA and the CIA and everybody else to say, well, is this spyware? Because there's a lot of people in America using it. So it may even be safer than some other Linux distribution that isn't being carefully checked. And, of course, what was I going to run it on? Well, my nice new Lenovo laptop that's made by a Chinese company in China. Admittedly designed in North Carolina, but made by a Chinese company in China. So after I thought about it a little while, it seems silly to worry about using a Chinese operating system on my Chinese hardware. Nevertheless, I'm not, but it's pretty nice. It was a Deepin. It's called Deepin. And yeah, no, it's in English. You can get the English version. So what do you think? I mean, are you going to, even if you get a drone from another manufacturer, I like the Parrot AR drones. They actually kind of started the iPhone controlled drones. They have some very nice new ones. They're made in China. It's not a Chinese company, I guess, but they're made in China. Your TV's made in many cases in China. Not if it's a Samsung, but I don't know. Actually, maybe the TVs are mostly made in Korea. Although we know that the TVs can spy on you and often do. Often do. Samsung and others have software. All you have to do is look at the license agreement that you agreed to without reading when you first used that TV set that says things like, we may send information about what you're watching back to the home office. And, of course, the NSA, we know, has techniques for turning on the cameras and the microphones, if there are any, in your TV surreptitiously. Who are you worried more about spying on you, Chinese or American government spies? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And Amazon's listening.
For some people, falling asleep.
Ah, that's interesting, huh? Well, the nature of Linux is you can sideload a VPN product. There's no store. That's the difference between the iPhone and any other system in the world. The iPhone can only load stuff from Apple's store. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. Ooh, Mike B. in the chat room just sent me an interesting link. Kind of a historic day. On August 6th, 1991, the World Wide Web went public. What? 26 years ago. Wow, that's kind of cool. The World Wide Web. Now, the World Wide Web is designed by a guy named Tim Berners-Lee. He's a physicist. He was at CERN, the big Swiss particle accelerator, and the European Organization for Nuclear Research. And he wanted a way for physicists to share information. He had one of those old Next computers. Remember Next? Oh, those were pretty machines. Ridiculously expensive and underpowered, but really cool. Black cubes. Steve Jobs created it after he was fired at Apple. And so he had a Next cube. And he decided that the best way for physicists to share information was to use their network, because they're all the computers are networked together, and create a what he called, in 1989, quote, a large hypertext database with typed links. What is hypertext? That's that thing where you click on some text and it goes to another page. He thought this would be great. Now, in his original design, Tim Berners-Lee thought that, well, the whole idea is everybody could interact on a page. So we click a link, you go to that page, but then you can add your notes. That turned out not to. That's a wiki. That's something else. But it was in 1991 that it escaped the labs at CERN and became the World Wide Web. I remember Tim Berners-Lee once said, if I had known that people would be looking at the addresses, http://, and all that, I would never have done it that way. I thought it just was just machines that were going to see that. 8888 asked Leo, well, happy anniversary. Happy birthday to the World Wide Web. Dave on the line next from Crystal Lake, Illinois. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I am great. How are you?
It's good, good. Hey, hoping you can help me. I've got a Samsung Galaxy Tab A.
Yeah, it's a nice tablet. Yeah.
Yep, it works really well. Somehow or another, I got some type of malware on there or something.
Really?
I get these. Yeah. I get pop-ups that take over the whole screen. And, you know, sometimes they have an X where I just press it and goes away, or I hit the back button and it goes away. So I'm calling you to see.
Well, now you're running Android.
Yep.
So that doesn't mean you can't get malware, but it's rare. Now, unfortunately, with these Galaxy Tabs, they don't update them. So what version do you know off the top of your head of Android are you using?
Yeah, let's see. The device
came with the Lollipop, as I remember.
Yeah, so that would be
Android 5.
Security.
The problem, of course, is when these Android devices don't get updated, is they just become more and more porous to malware.
Okay, sure. 6.01.
Okay.
Android version.
Yeah, well, that's good. You were able to upgrade it a little bit. You still are not on the latest version. You're on Marshmallow, not Nougat.
Okay.
I'm going to go in a diabetic coma if I keep this up. But certainly keep it up to date will help. My suspicion is when you see these pop-ups, is your browser also open?
No. Doesn't. No.
So you're just seeing ads. And you'll be in an application, or where will you see these ads pop up?
Yeah. I can be on weather.com. I can be on Fox News. And boop, all of a sudden, they just pop up.
And they're not coming from Fox or Linda. These are separate.
No.
What are they ads for?
Oh, clothing. Huh. All kinds of things.
Interesting. Well, there are, and especially in older versions of Android, there are conceivably things that could be in there. The easiest way to fix this would be to back up to Google. There's a settings,
okay,
backup and reset. You click that box that says backup to Google. That'll back up which applications you have. It'll back up your settings, your Wi-Fi settings, things like that. And then erase the phone. Do a factory reset. That'll wipe everything out. And then you can slowly restore your applications. The first time you do it, you could restore everything. You just, you know, do it when you got, like, overnight. When you got a couple of hours, you can leave it on the internet overnight. And then see if that fixes it. Then that's a good sign. That means there was something in there that got downloaded or whatever. But the problem is it could also be a rogue application that you've installed.
Sure. I bet you that's what it is.
Yeah. So the best way to do this is just to go through the apps and uninstall. You know, go to the settings, apps, and uninstall, remove apps and their data that you don't use. Or, you know, if you went out and got, you know, a wallpaper manager,
mm-hmm,
you know, 16 mm-hmm. desert scenes or something like that. Those are the ones to get rid of. Those tend to be the malware. It's not going to be the big name apps that you use every day.
Right. Yeah. So could I, if I did the factory reset and then just brought one in at a time?
That's what I would do. It'll ask you, do you want to restore all your apps? And you say, no.
Okay.
I do not. Now, the nice thing is you can go into the Google Play Store, the App Store, and there, and say, go to the My Apps section, and they'll have ones that are installed, but they'll have ones that are not installed. So you can actually go through that list slowly and add the ones you used to have but are not yet installed.
You lost me on that.
So in the App Store, there's a tab under the menu called My Apps. That's all the apps you've installed. But on that page at the top, you can also go to Not on this device. And those are apps that you once installed but you don't have on there currently. That makes it very easy to go down that list and say, well, yeah, reinstall that. Now,
I see.
It may just be that if you look and see, you might see an app or two that just go, I probably shouldn't have put that on there, and just uninstall it, and that should get rid of it. Are these, tell me about the ads. Do they cover up the lynda.com content, or?
Yeah, they can be either, you know, 2/3 of the screen, or they can be 100% of the screen.
Oh, that's terrible. Some websites do that, but you're in the app, the Lynda app? Or are you on the browser?
No, I'm in the actual apps. I mean, it can happen either one, within the browser.
The browser, maybe, I'd understand. That might even be that site doing it. But if it's doing it in an app, that's probably something running in the background, yeah.
Yeah, I think I know which one it might be.
I thought you might. It's, you know, even when you're in the store. And by the way, just because it's in the Google Play Store doesn't mean it's safe. They sure will try to remove stuff. They scan stuff when you download it, but it doesn't mean it's safe. There are even issues, even with all the security patches. I'm currently on my Pixel. The latest is the July security patch. We should get August the next week. But even if you have all those patches on there, there's still stuff that's possible that Google says, well, that's not a bug. For instance, it's possible to write text on top of other applications. And that's how Facebook does its chat heads, those little bubbles that pop up. Google doesn't want to take that feature out because Facebook uses it. But it is dangerous because, you know, you could pop up something that looks like a Google login and ask for your password, things like that. Remove stuff you're not sure you need. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I was really blown away by when I installed, I use Entergos Linux, which is, you know, one of my favorite Linux installers, very easy. It turns it into an Arch machine. But I was very pleased when I installed Entergos on here that not only did it recognize, you know, the Wi-Fi, all of the devices, it has acceleration for the Kaby Lake newer processor and the newer Intel graphics. It supports everything, the trackpad out of the box, even like things like the screen brightness and the sound keys. I don't have to do anything at all. Linux has come a long way. A lot of that is just built into the kernel. Some of it is non-free drivers that Entergos puts on their installer. I also think a lot of credit goes to Lenovo because they are they're making hardware that kind of supports Linux. It's it runs very nicely on this, and the battery life is good. It even recognized the fact that Lenovo has two batteries, which is kind of amazing. So you could see the main battery and the extra battery. Just out of the box, recognizes stuff like that. I don't know what would do with a smart card reader, but I have to get a smart card to find out. Nor do I know the SD card reader works. It's pretty good. This is, you know, one of the reasons I got this is because Cory Doctorow, that's what he does. He buys a new Lenovo every year, although you probably don't need to. These things are, of course, he's tough on stuff. I've seen his laptops practically bent in half. But he immediately takes off Windows and puts Linux on it. It's not heavy. They're two small batteries, but that's one of the reasons I bought this, is for really good battery life. These are great Linux machines, right? I had been buying Dells because they have the developer program, and it's, you know, Project Sputnik to put Linux on there. But Lenovo is easily just as good. Oh, the other thing that surprised me is I put FreeBSD on here and it installed perfectly. Same thing, all the drivers, everything worked. I didn't do FreeBSD, I did TrueOS. That may have more driver support on there. I don't know if the WAN. I have to figure out if the WAN device is in here. I think I'm going to have to open it up. But the reason I brought it is I just wanted to see how long I could get, how long it would go on the battery. I think it's going to go all day easily. It's not even half used up. Yeah, Boot Camp works great, Rufus. I love Boot Camp on the Mac. Say again?
Do we have Chris here?
Oh, I'm sorry. No Chris. I meant to tell you. Thank you for asking. I use GNOME, but yeah, Antergos gives you your choice. I've tried a couple. I want to try TrueShell, but it crashes when I install it, so I got to figure out what I did wrong with TrueShell. But GNOME 3, I'm just used to it. I use GNOME on this. This machine is a Debian machine, so I use GNOME 3 on it because I have all the plugins. I just kind of know what I'm going to get with GNOME. It's not the most inspiring interface, but it's effective. It works. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Normally, Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, would join us. He was called away at the last moment. So he'll be back next week. We were going to do an assignment review, but this gives you one more week. Actually, that's what I told Chris. Fine. I need one more week to take pictures that illustrate the word or concept joy. Joy. Joy to the world. Joy. So this is how it works. It's not a contest. There's no prize. Merely an excuse to go out and take more pictures. Because, you know, that's how you get good at photography. Take pictures. Yeah, you're good at anything is doing it. No one ever got good at something by not doing it. Right? So you can't just have the camera. I got the camera. Have it on the shelf. And then when you need to take great pictures, do it. You got to take them every day. So we give you this topic. Go out. Take at least one picture a day. When you get one you really like, you tag it with the word joy. Upload it to Flickr. That's the free photo sharing site. It's actually a great photo community. FLICKR.com. Owned by Yahoo. So I guess it's now an Oath property. That's the new name for Yahoo. Yeah, Oath. What a terrible name. Oath. And fortunately, Yahoo has not messed with Flickr. They've not improved it much, but they haven't messed with it. And I hope Oath does not. I hope Verizon, the new owners, do not. But it's still there. And if you upload it to Flickr and you tag it with the word joy, you can then submit it to the Tech Guy group. That's our special little group on Flickr. There are about 11,000 people, members. Many, many pictures there. So you could submit one picture a week. Renee Silverman, our moderator, will accept it. And that means you get one more chance. That means I have one more chance to find joy, take a picture of it, and upload it. Could be a person named Joy. Could be Dr. Joy Brown. We don't tell you what it is. Just Joy. And next week, Chris will pick three and just kind of talk about them, which in itself is cuckoo because I don't know how you talk about a picture on the radio. But he does it. He likes to do it. Let's go to Coachella, California. Keith is on the line. Hi, Keith.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well. Welcome. What can I do for you?
Well, if you remember, I called you last week about the Echo and phone calls.
I did. And did you ever get it doing what you wanted it to do?
No.
Okay.
But then when you were explaining to me about how you use yours to control some of the appliances and devices in your house.
Are you watching TV while you're talking to me?
I was listening to the race while you were...
Oh, that's okay. What race is it?
NASCAR race.
Oh, all right. I just was wondering. Yeah, so you can't control all devices with the Echo. In fact, most devices, you have to have an Echo skill. So that's the. This is where you really make the Echo sing. The Echo, as out of the box, when it comes out of the box, this is Amazon's voice service. Isn't there a variety of Echoes? There's the old-fashioned black cylinder. That's almost $200. There's the Dot. There's, let's see, the Tap, which I don't know anybody owns the Tap. That's the battery powder. Actually, I think Dr. Mom has one. You tap it to talk to the lady in the box. They have some new ones. I have the Echo Show now, which is the one with the screen. I really like that. If you're going to buy one, that's the one. Or the Dot, which is the least expensive. The Dot you have to hook up to speakers so you can, you know, so it sounds good. It has a little tinny speaker, which it's really meant to hook up to real speakers, powered speakers. There's the Echo, what's the shopping one? I got it's a wand. I have it. I never use it. It's just magnetically attached to my my refrigerator. And the theory is every time you know, run out of something, you scan it. And it gets added to your grocery list, and I'm sure Amazon's theory is, and then you'll buy it from Amazon. The problem I have is my carrots and celery don't have barcodes on them. I don't. Most of what I eat doesn't have barcodes on it, so it's not much use. It'd be kind of cool if you could, like, okay, so my milk does. If I could scan the milk when I run out of milk, and it would order it and send it to me, but it doesn't do that. You have to buy it. You still have to buy it. There's a new one called the Echo Look that's got a camera in it, and then you take a picture of your outfit. And it judges you. It judges you. So, but all the Echoes who use Amazon voice services, they all have different hardware skills. But the key is, out of the box, they don't do a lot. They have a, you know, you can ask them what time it is. You can play music. You can set a timer. You can ask what the weather's like. You can have it read you your news. Actually, it does a lot. You can listen to this show on the Echo. You say, if you want to hear our live stream at any time, you just say Echo. Listen to Twit Live. That's the name of my company, Twit. Yeah, I know. I know what you're thinking. Twit. Say, listen to Twit Live. Sometimes you have to say Twit Live. Like, her pronunciation is not great. But Twit Live, usually on TuneIn, and it'll just start playing. Or you could say, Echo, listen to The Tech Guy. If you want to hear the most recent show, listen to The Tech Guy. And it will on TuneIn. I think you have to say on TuneIn, and it'll play it. So it has a lot of stuff built in, but really it doesn't begin to touch all the things it can do. There are, what was the last count? 50,000? I think something like that, skills. The problem is very hard to find. You have to go into the app, the Alexa app on your phone, and look for skills. So when you buy a device, we've talked about the Logitech Harmony Hub, for instance. This is a remote control for your home theater setup. And you can control that. You can say, Echo, let's watch ESPN, NASCAR's on. And it will tell the Harmony, if you've set it up properly, to turn on the TV, turn on the satellite box, tune it to channel 473, and there's NASCAR on your TV. That's kind of nice, especially if you have a complicated AV setup. That's the Harmony. But the key on getting the Echo to work with it is you have to go into the Alexa app on your smartphone and enable that skill. I think you can also do it on the Amazon website, but you have to enable that skill. So you have to find the skill out of 50,000. Search for Logitech, and then enable it. And when you look at the readout on the app, it'll tell you what some of the commands are. Same thing for the Hue lights. It'll turn your lights on or off, or it'll make them different colors, but you have to add that skill. SmartThings Hub, the Wink Hub, there are a bunch of skills for a variety of home devices. The Nest, I use it to look at my doorbell, our sponsor, the Ring Video Doorbell. I look at the doorbell. Like I say, I can actually say to my show, because it's got a screen, Echo, show me who's at the front door, and it will show you. You can even talk to them, which is neat. But it wouldn't do that unless I turned on the Ring Video Doorbell app. I'm sorry, skill in the app. So, I'm just, I guess the key is to figure out which smart devices you have. If those smart devices work with Echo, usually they'll say, and then you find the skill in the Alexa app and turn it on. And that's kind of how it's supposed to work. Go back to your race, Keith. Thanks for calling. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Next on the line from Covina, California, Joe. Hey, Joe.
Yeah, hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I wanted to get a Chromebook, but I have specific specifications for it, and I wanted your recommendation. It has to be at least 15 inches,
it has to be able to do the 360 thing, has to be at least 32 gigs of solid state memory, and at least 16 gigs of RAM.
Wow. You described a kind of high-end Chromebook.
Well, if that's what it takes. But
I don't know. You know, the old Google Chromebook Pixel, which was very pricey. I mean, you're talking a $1,200 Chromebook there. It had an i5. It had 16. The 16 gigs of RAM is going to be a little hard to do. Most of them have 4, or if you're, you know, getting the high-end, 8. The 2-in-1s I like, and my daughter Abby has the Samsung Chromebook Plus. That's very nice. That's a 2-in-1. Doesn't have all that memory. Does have a touch screen. Runs Android apps. That's one of the things you should look for. The expectation that you have with the 16 gigs of RAM is really coming from more bulky operating systems like Windows and Mac. Chromebooks run fine. Chrome OS, that's their operating system, runs fine in 4 gigs. If you had 8, you'd have plenty. I don't think Samsung offers 8, actually. Take a look at the Asus 302. I think fits all your needs. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right, we're going to continue with the tech guy show in just a second. But first, I want to tell you about a company you, I'm sure, know about, Quicken Loans, right? It's a very well-known company, especially among geeks, because it's a very forward-looking home mortgage company. In fact, the number 2 mortgage company in the country, the biggest non-bank mortgage company, Quicken Loans. Sports fans know the Quicken Loans arena, right? But I have to say, one of the things I love about Quicken Loans is that they understand technology. They're very high tech. A lot of places you can go for a mortgage, not exactly in the 21st century. I remember when Lisa and I got our loan, we went to the guy's office, and he has a clipboard. But it's like this, but it has basically a phone book on there, which changes every day. All the rates are on there. And it changes every day with this, like, rice paper, very thin paper. And he's licking his finger and paging through the rates. That should have been a sign. We should have walked right out. Unfortunately, Rocket Mortgage wasn't around almost 4 years ago when we got our last home loan. I wish we had, because as it turned out, that was just the beginning. It took us months to get that loan from the big bank that's the number one lender in the country. They wanted paperwork. We had to fax them stuff. We had to fax them stuff from vacation. It was that bad. Never again. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans is designed for the geeks. It's designed with a couple of things in mind. Of course, complete transparency. You obviously have to trust this process and know you're getting the right loan for you. And so what they do is, you could do this on your phone. You could do it from anywhere. You could be at an open house and do this. You simply get on there and you say, I want to apply for a loan. There's some paperwork, yes, but the way they've done it is so smart. They've partnered with all the financial institutions. So all you have to do is give your bank permission to give them your bank statements or like that, or your pay stubs. It's just completely electronic, touch of the button, completely secure. They then, of course, because it's all computerized, it's all online, can crunch those numbers and give you a list of things, loans you qualify for based on your income, your assets, and your credit. All the information you need, the payments, the term, the rate, everything you need to know right there, and then you pick what you want. And you're done. And that's the cool thing. At that point, you're approved. Not months later, not weeks or days later, but minutes later. It's that fast. That's why they call it Rocket Mortgage. It lifts the burden of applying for a home loan, brings the home loan process into the 21st century. I will never do any other way again. And if you are about to buy a home or refinance your existing home loan, please do me a favor. Go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Save yourself the paperwork, the hassle, the time. And know exactly what's going on. Fully transparent, so you can understand what you're doing and apply with confidence. Actually, that's their slogan. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Quicken Loans. It's rocketmortgage.com/techguy. rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Equal housing lender license in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org. Number 3030. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Thank you so much for your support of the Tech Guy podcast, rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Here's an interesting Echo story. Wow, this just happened. And so we were talking earlier about Echo skills and what it can do and whether it can turn on appliances. I didn't know this is one of its skills. My daughter was coming over to the studio. She wanted to pick up something. And I guess she didn't remember where it was. She couldn't remember. So she went over. She knows where my house is. So she went over to our house. And nobody was there. So I don't. Why did you do that? She just blurted out, "Did you know we had an Echo?" She just blurted out, "Echo, where is the Twit studio?" And it answered.
"I found a studio nearby. It's 25.3 miles away on Sir Francis Drake Boulevard."
Oh, it's good you didn't do to that one.
"Business hours for this."
That was a different studio. But it did. It found our studio, and she came over here, and she found it by asking the Echo. Wow. That is kind of a wild story. 8888, ask Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Moving on. Let's see. I was talking to, let me see. I got to make sure I get everybody on there because you've been so patient. I think line four, Corey in San Pedro, California is next. Hi, Corey.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Hey, you know, what's interesting is you talk, my wife called you a couple weeks ago, Laura, San Pedro, asking about, she was asking about the, you know, the whole navigation system and using real-time traffic and all that.
Yeah, she had in her car, she had one thing, but she wasn't getting traffic updates from, I guess it was a subscription feature, right? So I told her to use Waze. Did she use Waze?
Yes. Well, that's what I'm calling about.
Oh, okay.
So the question now is being able to get Waze onto CarPlay, onto the screen CarPlay. Because she did it on her phone.
Yeah. Do you have Android, right, or no?
No. Apple.
Laura has an Apple. Okay.
Yes.
So they just announced, of all things, tell me the car again. What was the car?
It's a Hyundai Sonata.
Okay. You have Android Auto and CarPlay. So Google just announced with Android Auto that Waze was now out of beta and available on Android Auto. But I don't know what the status is on CarPlay, on the Apple solution. Because that would be ideal, wouldn't it? Instead of having Apple Maps or on the screen, on your CarPlay screen, you'd have the Waze icon. And you can now do it. It was right after Laura called that they announced that. I thought, oh, they were listening. But unfortunately, it was, I guess, for Android only. But let me check real quickly if they've got the Waze in beta yet for CarPlay, because that's what I think they do. And if they do, then it would be a question. Yeah. Okay. So it's tricky, but there is a way to do it.
Okay.
I'm looking at CarPlayLife.com. Enter the settings app. Lots of buttons, lots of switches, lots of pushes. And then connect your phone to the CarPlay. Open the Waze app on your phone. Oh, it doesn't display on the CarPlay. However, let's see. You can now navigate. Waze runs in the background. At least it'll go through the sound, but you won't see the picture. See, I think that this is coming soon. Well, wait a minute. Oh, crumbum. I'm just looking at it. It says Waze has launched for Android Auto. Google has no plans to put it on CarPlay. Darn you, Google. That's anti-competitive. That's because it's Apple. That's a little game Google and Apple play with each other. And guess who gets hurt by that? Not Google or Apple. Us. Darn it.
Right.
So this is a recent article that says there's no intention. Google has no intention as of July 26th. Of plans to bring its app to CarPlay. That's probably because Apple doesn't seem to have any plans to allow third-party maps to be blessed up as the default navigation apps. So Apple then. It's not on Google. I bet you Apple's just saying, no, you know, what's wrong with Apple Maps? Don't you like Apple Maps?
Have you tried it? Well, I don't think she's tried Apple Maps.
Apple Maps is what shows up on the CarPlay.
Okay, right. Okay.
Yeah. So, and she, the problem is Apple Maps has some traffic information, but not as much as Google Maps, and not nearly as much as Waze, and that's what you really want. So, Laura, you can use Waze audio in your Bluetooth. I think you know that already. But,
yes.
Yeah. But, yeah, she wants to see it on the screen. I don't blame her. That'd be so much nicer.
I want to see the cops.
Yeah.
She wants to see the cops? I heard her say that. I heard that.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, she's worried about the speed traps, huh? That's by the way, that's a very controversial feature on Waze that some police associations, there was one, I think, in Pennsylvania that said, this endangers officers because now people can find an officer when they're hiding. But I don't think it endangers officers. I think it's, but in some states, radar detectors are illegal. I wouldn't be surprised if at some point they say, you can't reveal our secret hiding places.
Yeah.
But
until then.
I'm sorry. I wish there was some way to do it. My daughter, you use Waze, right, Abby? No, she uses Google Maps or Apple Maps. She actually turns out her car accidentally just fits the phone perfectly on the screen. But you could just mount your phone, get one of those suction cup devices and mount your phone. And then it would be right next to the CarPlay speaker, right? There is. Yeah. Okay, so. Tony in the chat room says he's got a hack to bring Waze app to Apple CarPlay. Hey, anybody who's worried about the cops won't mind hacking her iPhone. So she's already a criminal. No, I'm teasing. I'm just teasing. Let's see here. There's a video on YouTube. Oh. Let's see, Siri. So I guess somebody's written an application that will do this. So if you search Google for Waze Apple CarPlay, he's got a video that shows his Waze running in his CarPlay display in a Jeep Wrangler. So I don't know how tricky this hack is. It sounds like you're going to download an app of some kind, obviously bypassing Apple's. Apple doesn't want you to do it. Let me see if you have to jailbreak. Oh, if you had to jailbreak, I wouldn't recommend it.
Jailbreak, right?
Yeah, I don't think you have to jailbreak. Nick Franco's. Oh, yeah, you have to jailbreak. Wait, a lot of the ways up. No, don't jailbreak. That's a bad idea. You don't want to jailbreak.
Yeah, because we actually tried to jailbreak.
Don't ever,
download that. That was a nightmare.
Oh, so you've seen this already. Yeah, don't do that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's too bad. I think, unfortunately, you are caught in the, when dinosaurs battle, it behooves the little cavemen to get out of the way.
Right.
Now, of course, that's historically completely inappropriate because the cavemen and the dinosaurs did not coexist at any time in history. But you get the idea. When Godzilla and Mothra are fighting it out, the denizens of Tokyo should get off the streets because the only thing that happens is you squish a lot of people. And that's what's happening with Google and Apple and Gabo. Oh, you don't want to use Google on our CarPlay. So now, by the way, your phone probably, in fact, I know it will do Android Auto. Almost every car that does CarPlay that I know of does Android Auto. So one way to respond to this would be to get an Android device. You don't have to get a phone. Get a cheap Android device with the internet access and just keep it in the car. We're talking.
Like what would you reckon? Like what?
Here's what I would do. Google Fi is a pretty cheap data only. They offer data only connections, $10 a gigabyte. They run on T-Mobile and Sprint and U.S. Cellular, so their connectivity is good all over the country. And it's inexpensive. And you can buy an old Google phone, like a Nexus 6 or a 6P, and get a Fi chip in it. And then it would connect to your car via Android Auto and just leave it in the car, plugged into the cigarette lighter so it's got power. And now you've got Waze on your car dashboard. How about that? Now we're cooking with gas.
Nice.
Hey, it's nice to talk to you both. Thank you, Corey. Thank you, Laura. Was Laura too shy to call? Is that what? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. You might be able to get, there are other ways to do that too. You can get a really cheap Android phone on Amazon, like the BLU phones or that. And then the issue is going to be getting a SIM card for it. You should check with your carrier. They may have data-only SIM cards you could get. Or you could use your phone as a hotspot. But just get a cheap Android device that you can connect with the Android Auto. And the key is you're going to need data to use Waze on it.
Yeah, right.
So you could hotspot it to your phone.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, what about hotspotting?
Hotspot it to your phone. Just turn on the hotspotting on your phone. You get in the car. You're going to hotspot to that Android device, that cheap Android device.
Right.
And then now make sure the Android device supports CarPlay.
Right.
Somebody's telling me that Google's selling the 5X on Amazon for $278. That would be a good choice. I'm pretty sure that. Make sure it does CarPlay, but that's the key. If it does CarPlay, then you can launch Waze on it. You can keep it running, plug it into the cigarette lighter, or if you have a USB port, keep it running in there, and just don't take it out. It's now your GPS device. I think you can get cheaper than $278, though. You could get a less expensive.
Okay, and it's called, you said the Google 5?
Well, the 5X is one, but that's $278 is a little pricey. I think I would look for something around $100. I think you could probably buy a used Nexus 6. That's a big 6-inch screen. Actually, it's as big as your CarPlay, your Android Auto screen. But I'm pretty sure, first of all, so here's the checklist. Does the car do Android Auto? Probably it does. If it does CarPlay, it probably does. If it does Android Auto, then you need an Android device that supports Android Auto.
Okay, gotcha. Right.
Moto E, $129. That's brand new too.
Moto E.
Yeah, the Moto E, fourth generation. That's probably as cheap as you're going to get. It'd be like buying a GPS device, kind of.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
And you can keep it in the car all the time.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
You could even, like, if you have a glove compartment USB charger, you can just leave it in the glove compartment.
Yeah, you do, don't you? Yeah. Well, on the side she does.
And do what G. Scott did. Download my voice for your ways.
Yeah, how do you do that?
We probably have a link somewhere. I tweeted it a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
I should do a better one. I just did it in my normal voice. I should do something sillier, but I just did a normal one. Maybe I'll do some more.
Okay.
Hey, yeah, nice to talk to you both.
Nice. Okay. Thanks, Leo.
See ya. Bye.
Directions you love from people you trust. Let's go. We're all set. Let's go. Start driving. In 0.1 miles. In a quarter of a mile. In half a mile. In 1 mile. In 200 meters.
They have to do the metric ones, too.
Keep left.
Yeah.
Keep right. Turn left.
No.
Turn right.
There's only about, I don't know, 30 things.
Exit left. Exit right. Continue straight. Make a U-turn.
Okay.
At the roundabout.
Then you have to do all the exits of the roundabout.
The fun part is realizing that you can get anywhere with like a half an hour worth of directions.
Take the third exit.
That you just combine it.
Take the fourth exit. Take the fifth exit. Take the sixth exit.
Okay, stop.
Take the seventh
exit. Remember, this is the one.
Police reported ahead.
He said it more serious.
Accident reported ahead.
Yeah, those are serious.
Accident
reported. Hazard ahead. Reported ahead. Heavy traffic reported ahead.
That's a little nicer. Yeah, it's a cheery.
Red light camera reported ahead.
Heavy traffic.
Uh-oh.
Speed trap reported ahead.
And this is my favorite.
And then.
Oh, this is a good one.
Oh, screw it. Let's try this again.
That's the rerouting one.
No way.
Cause
did you make that up?
Yeah. You've arrived.
Yeah, they give you a script. Arrived. Yeah, they give you a script, but you could do different things.
That's clever. I like it. Hilarious.
You've arrived. You're a terrible driver. Pull over and turn off your car.
You're tuned to Premier Channel 7. Leo Laporte.
Abby. We'll be Speed trap ahead. I could record some custom ones for you. Abby, turn right.
Watch out for the bicyclist.
Watch out. Why don't you do that? Watch out, watch out, watch out. Ah!
Most emotive GPS you've ever had. By far.
I had, for a while, I had, I've had a bunch of different celebrity voices on my TomTom. I had, who was it? It was that Dennis Hopper. Dude, why would you want to, why would anyone want to go here? And then we had GLaDOS from Portal. Remember the bad robot from Portal, bad computer from Portal? She'd say, turn left when you're supposed to go right.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Wait,
yeah. It was a really bad voice. Yeah. No, yeah, sort of. And then she'd go, there's cake at the end of the line. And then you get there, she'd go, there's no cake. Cake is a lie. Here we go. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk tech, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches. All that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. The website, techguylabs.com. We go back to the phones. Keith from Phoenix, Arizona. Hello, Keith.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm well. What can I do for you today?
I just bought the new Eero system.
Oh, good. How do you like it?
Oh, I like it a lot. It's pretty easy to set up.
Should mention they are a sponsor of some of our podcasts. I like to do those disclaimers so people understand, you know.
No, absolutely. In fact, that's kind of why I bought it, because I listened to your iOS.
That's what I like to hear. Did you get the new one, the Beacon?
Yes, I got the new one.
Yeah. I use that at home, and I've found that to be really good.
Yeah, it's pretty solid for my house. I got the one with two beacons in the main station.
Yeah, the base unit. This is one of those new mesh systems where you have a base and two satellites, and it's theoretically that should be enough for about a 4,000 square foot house.
Yeah, and that's kind of my question is I'm trying to find a way to measure a Wi-Fi signal so I can move the beacons around and make sure I'm getting like the best coverage in the house.
That's you know, in theory, the Eero and most of these other mesh devices are smart enough to kind of manage that for you. But if you do want to, it's a nice thing. You can't do it on an iPhone, but you can do it on an Android phone, a Windows machine, or a Macintosh. Do you have any of those?
I definitely have a Mac computers.
Okay. So there is a Wi-Fi analyzer available for the Macintosh. It's probably not in the App Store. I don't know. I use Insider, which is spelled with two S's, in SSID. Get it? That's kind of a geek joke. But I think that might be Windows only. Let me just check. But I know I have a Wi-Fi analyzer for the Mac that I just can't remember off the top of my head the name of it. Let me look at my Mac and maybe I can.
Yeah, I can find plenty of Android ones. I'm surprised there's not one for iOS.
That's Apple. They will not give you access to the Wi-Fi radio signal. A third party can't get to it. They can get the data. They can't get the signal strength. So that's very typical of Apple. In fact, if there's one category the iOS devices are weak on, it's that. Applications that need to access the hardware directly. They don't support it. So let me just see what I have on the Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi Explorer is the one I use in the Macintosh. I can't remember if it's free or not, but it's nice. It gives you a bar or a chart, actually a line graph of how the internet's going. You can see the different frequencies, lots of information. You can see signal strength. You can see network details. Very nice, and I'm pretty sure that's free. Let me tell you who it's from. Wi-Fi Explorer by a guy named Adrian Granados. It doesn't say anything more than that. But I think if you Google Wi-Fi Explorer Macintosh, you can find it.
That's perfect. I do have one other iOS question, if you got a quick sec.
Yeah. By the way, on these Wi-Fi devices, the other good use for them is to understand how badly congested your network is. A lot of times the reason there's bad Wi-Fi is not the layout of the house or the composition of the walls, but the neighbors. You probably know if you can see your neighbor's Wi-Fi, you'll see it on your Wi-Fi picker, but you may not know how strong it is, And these devices let you determine where it's coming from, how strong it is, and you can maybe choose a better channel. In theory, the Eero does it by itself very effectively. It'll not only choose different channels within the 2.4 or the 5 or the other 5, it has 2-5 gigahertz ranges, but it'll even choose the right radio, the 2 or the 5, and which of the 3 devices to use, depending on the situation. So it's pretty good about routing around that. What's your other question?
I definitely want to restore my iPhone, like back to factory settings, but yeah. I don't want to lose my health data.
Well, there are layers in the iPhone of resetting. You know, you actually have, it's kind of hard to erase it entirely. So why do you want to erase it?
I'm having problems with it with my Apple Watch. Like, I'm not getting notifications or text messages from like my wife or something.
Yeah, that's a good reason to do it. I've reset my watch many times. You know, I have to say though, in the latest generations of the Apple Watch, they must have figured out what was wrong, because I don't have nearly the pairing issues that I did with the Series 1 Apple Watch. So they've apparently fixed that. Yeah, if you go into the settings. And I'm trying to remember where it is. There are a number of levels of erase. Mm-hmm. And start with the lowest level and see if it fixes it. You can, in other words, you can reset network settings. I would start with that. And then if that doesn't do it, then you can do more. And only the last one will erase your health data. When you say health data, what do you mean? You mean the emergency contact information or?
No, all the steps and stuff, all the data.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Apple Watch and stuff like.
That's probably stored on the cloud, I would think. But maybe,
yeah, maybe. It's just one of those things, is like it brings everything. And so if you ever go to Apple, their step one is put it back to factory settings. I don't want to lose my gear.
Yeah. Well, try network settings reset first.
Okay.
That might be all it needs. I think you can reset both Bluetooth and Wi-Fi on those phones. I think that might be all you need.
All right.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Yeah. Now, these mesh network routers are all the rage now. In fact, if I were going out buying a router, if you live in a one-bedroom apartment, you probably don't need anything fancy. But if you live in a two- or three-bedroom home, if you have more than 1,500 square feet, let's make it that. That's probably the dividing line. Or if you have a neighborhood with lots of Wi-Fi signals, neighbors nearby, apartment dwellers really have to deal with that, right? Because they're just on the other side of the wall. Then some of these mesh networks are a good solution. But each has its strengths and weaknesses. So it's hard to make a blanket recommendation. I've been very happy with the Eero. For most people, that's a pretty good choice. Not cheap. Not cheap at all. My friend Dave Hamilton's been trying all the different devices. He says there's a new one from TP-Link, does mesh Wi-Fi. We like TP-Link. It's a Chinese company that makes fairly inexpensive devices, networking devices of all kinds. And they have a new one called the Deco, D-E-C-O, that has built-in security, network protection, filtering, that kind of thing. The Eero has that now as well. He says he really likes the Deco, so that would be one to take a look at. And then I've been using also a kind of a different take on this mesh stuff called the Plume, P-L-U-M-E. The Deco, by the way, is the least expensive of these. I think you can get started for just over $200 for 3 units, which is about $100 less than everybody else. The Plume, $250 for a 3-unit setup. The Plume has a kind of an interesting model. You want one of these little Plume devices, and they plug into the wall. The only one of them has to be connected to the router. The rest of them can just be spread around the house. And you kind of want to put one in every room. And maybe one in each of, if you have longer halls, one in each of the halls. When you buy them in bulk, they're as little as $49 each. So they're a little less expensive. But you end up buying more of them because you want to have one everywhere. But they have an advantage that way because it's almost like a small pool of light. You know, if you had a table lamp in a room, it's nice. It just lights up that room. It's a pool of light. Think of the Plume as a pool of Wi-Fi, just a little pool of Wi-Fi. And by having it just local to each room, they don't interfere with other Wi-Fi, and others' Wi-Fi don't interfere with you as much. In some, particularly in congested areas where there's lots of Wi-Fi signals, the Plume might also be a good one. But everybody has, everyone's got its own little strength. For the low cost leader, clearly the TP-Link Deco at $250, three units, a base unit and two satellites. As far as performance goes, I found nothing outdoes the Eero. The Eero really has some nice features too. But maybe not the perfect thing for your particular situation. We're going to take a break, come back with more. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Not a fan, oddly enough, of the Ubiquiti Amplify. Those, Ubiquiti really in the enterprise created this category and probably leads. But the Amplify, and I have an Amplify HD. No, wait a minute. There's two Amplifies. There's the HD and the H. I have the one with more radios. They used to have an HS and an HD. Oh, they have LR. So don't get the long range. Yeah, get the HD. If you get it, $320. It's not my favorite. Not great results with that one. It's pretty. I really like the idea of it. But I have it in a box because we don't use it. My daughter has the Google Wi-Fi. And it's working well for you, right? But you're in an apartment. You don't need a lot of, and so she has a couple of units, and that does pretty well for her. Not my favorite, but in a small area, any one of these would probably be fine. So are you getting phone connection? Oh, nice! They totally cleaned it up.
Yeah, where do you want out here? Can't we just have it in the hallway?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. Okay. Here, let me show everybody. No, I think in the hall right on the right, on the left of my door.
Well, hold on.
I was given this when I left radio to work in a startup. Before you were born, Abby, I quit radio. My 30th birthday, I said, what am I doing with my life? This is a child's job. So I went to work for a company called Paracomp. It was a startup. I was the marketing director. And after 6 months, I left. But as I was leaving, the guy who started it.
Get it?
Gave me this poster. It was an original Next poster signed by Paul Rand, and they saved it. It was getting beat up and stained, but it looks great. Thank you.
Good. They did a good job.
Totally awesome. So glad to have
that.
You know, it's perfect because this is the 27th anniversary of the public release of the World Wide Web, which was designed in a Next Cube.
Yeah.
So there. By the way, that company, Paracomp, later merged with MacroMind to become the creators of Flash, Macromedia. Anyway, I left a little early. What the hell? Oh, well. I wonder if Paracomp is on Wikipedia or if it just disappeared into the ether. Had I stayed, I have a number of stories where had I stayed, I would have made some money. Yeah. Yeah. Paracomp, a Macintosh programming company known for their 3D software, Swivel 3D and Model Shop and Filmmaker. Acquired by MacroMind in 91. Then they became Macromedia. I was in charge of marketing. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. That was I was 30 in 1986. So I left radio in 86 to go into a startup, software startup. That was a little early. 3 months later, I went back into radio. I was like, okay, this isn't working out so good. Oh, Lord. It was founded by, what was his name, Crawford? I really liked the people I worked with there. It was fun. But I can't remember. What was his name? I was like the third employee. I was also the third employee of CNET, but that's another story. For another day. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This is no dress rehearsal. This is the real thing. the Tech Guy Radio Show. We don't rehearse. Nah, we just put it right on the air. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. If you got a question, a comment, a suggestion, let's go back to the phones. Mark in Vienna, Virginia, home of AOL. You've got mail. Hey, Mark.
Oh, you said that before, and they've moved out of Vienna 20 years ago.
I know. Former home. Oh, gosh. AOL is owned by Verizon now. They went to New York and...
No, they're in Dulles Airport.
Dulles, okay.
Yeah, they just moved like 10 miles out of Vienna.
You've got mail. Remember that?
Yeah. You've got floppies in your
You've
mail
got box. Floppies. Have some more. I have an AOL CD somewhere here. That's a memory of another era. You know, kids today, they probably have no idea what we're talking about.
I keep finding old stuff in my basement. I take it in to the Vienna Inn for breakfast, and I show some old-timers there, and they say, oh, yeah, I remember those. You know, whatever it is, but it's something
Let's
old.
Let's see with- here. AOL, 90 days risk-free. This is the CD that would come in the mail. It's got your registration number and password. Sign up now and enjoy AOL risk-free for 90 days.
My wife has a friend who, for years and years and years, kept paying AOL $20 or $25
a month.
And all she used them for was email. And we finally got her off onto a free AOL email.
Hallelujah. Account. I wonder how many... I actually wonder... That'd be interesting. How many people are still on AOL? I still see it all the time. You know, email addresses. You know, joey@AOL.com. Still see it.
Well, this friend of Nancy's is certainly still on AOL, but, I mean, she's not paying for it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
What can I do for you, my friend?
Okay. About a week ago, I'm sitting here at my Mac. I'm in Terminal, which, you know, is the old DOS command prompt, if you will, in the Windows language.
I remember it well.
Yeah, well, anyway, I'm using Terminal. And the terminal prompt, by default, shows you your computer name and then the folder you're in. And then, you know, you can start typing the command.
Yeah.
And I noticed my command prompt was Marie something or other, you know.
It wasn't just C:\?
Oh, no. No, I remember these ads that would pop up and say, oh, your computer is open to the internet. We can see what you got. Here's your hard drive.
Remember that? Yeah.
And I'm saying this is a Mac. But anyway.
There's no C:\ on this. So it says,
anyway.
So before the greater than sign, which is the final part of the prompt, there's a name of the computer is what it is.
Yeah, the computer name.
Yeah.
Which was Marie and a few random letters and a number or two.
So it's Marie's old computer.
No, I bought this computer in 2000.
Do you know anyone named Marie?
Yes, my mother-in-law, who has been dead for 15 years.
Well, somehow Marie got in your computer.
Well, what I'm trying to get at is
your mother-in-law's name is haunting your DOS prompt.
Okay, no. I mean, it has reverted back to what it should be normally. Yeah. It has reverted back.
Yeah. In the network preferences, you can change the name, the public name of your computer.
I never did that. I mean, I'm in network preference. I went straight there. And, no, the NetBIOS name in there is the proper computer name.
Well, maybe somebody was messing with you. You can change the prompt, as you probably know, with DOS commands. Remember we used to do that? I think it was DOS prompt, right? And you could make it all. You could make the time of day, the temperature.
And change color.
The tide.
The only other person in this household is my wife, and she's out 5,000 miles away with her sister.
Well, she didn't do it.
No, she didn't do it.
Oh,
now,
scary.
I started doing some Google searching, trying to figure this out, and I found stuff that claims that I can get a name from, some people say a DNS server, and some people say a DHCP server. And I can't see DNS giving me anything. It should look up the name once I got it and says your IP address is, but it shouldn't go the other way around and say, hey, your name is this. And I don't know, DHCP, that would have to be my router. And I've checked every configuration in the router, and there's nothing in there that should be giving me a new name. Where else could I come from?
Is it still there?
No. No, it reverted back within about 24 hours, and I can't remember if that took a reboot of the computer or if it was just shut down the command prompt and reopen it.
So when you go in the network...
I'm in network right now.
...control panel, and you see the properties for the account, and yes. That name is not Marie.
No, it is not.
Well, it must be the name then of a host that you're logged into. Actually kind of worried at this point. Because it's been a long time since I've played with the DOS command line. I'm more familiar with a Unix and Linux command line, but...
Remember, this is a Mac. We don't really...
Oh, you're on a Mac. I'm sorry. I thought it was a Windows machine.
No, I apologize. I'm in terminal.
How did I get there? I apologize. I'm thinking Windows.
I mentioned the dot command prompt as an analogy.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay. Now, I heard the word DOS, and I fixated on that. All right. So on the Macintosh, yeah, okay. So that's the bash, what we call the bash shell. And the bash shell has some rules for what precedes the prompt. And I believe that is the host name, not the name of the computer. So I am going to give you a link. We'll put it in the show notes. Tux Mint has just passed this along. How to change your Mac host name via terminal. That's the host name. Now, that's a weird host name, so that kind of bothers me that you're seeing that.
Yeah.
You should be – I'll just look on real quickly on my Mac and see what the host name is. Of course, I don't use Bash, so
– I had to Google that specific name trying to see if maybe other people in the internet had, you know, been hit by something and came up with the same name. But I'm seeing nothing.
Yeah, I think it's the host name. And so if you logged, for instance, if I used that command line and I SSH'd, I logged into a remote computer, which I do all the time, the prompt would change to the name of the remote computer.
Well, that's true. I agree with that.
Yeah.
So, but I haven't done that for a few years.
Well, that's the thing. You haven't done it intentionally for a few years. I'm wondering if your computer is connected to another computer for reasons unknown. Suspiciously connected. How did it revert? Just one day it stopped doing it?
Well, yeah, about 24 hours later, and like I said, I can't remember.
Here's what I want you to do. There's a program, it's a little annoying, but it's very useful, called Little Snitch. It monitors outbound network connections on a Macintosh. It's so annoying, most people don't run it all the time, but it's very useful for keeping an eye on software that is, without your knowledge, making a connection to the outside world. I would run it for a day or two and see. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I thought he said DOS. I really did. Yeah, so now it says I've logged into a remote computer on my bash shell, and now it says my login name, Leo, at, and then the host name of the computer, and then it's the command prompt. Well, see, the funny thing about a DOS shell is it has nothing to do with the bash shell, and it's not even remotely related. It's a command line. But, this is so easy to change in a lot of ways. It's weird that... I think the best thing he could do is run Little Snitch. Oh, man, I love this song. The Sugar Hill Gang, Rapper's Delight. This was, I think, is widely still considered the first rap song. Gosh knows why. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So Knox Harrington said in our chat room, he's very smart. He's one of our many, many, many very, very smart chatters. that if the host name is unavailable on a Mac, then the name you'll see at the command prompt in the terminal will come from your network server, your DHCP server, or in other words, your router, or it could come from your DNS server. So it could be a weird coincidence that the last caller's maiden mother's name was the same as the name he saw in the bash prompt, or it could have come from the network somewhere, either his router or his internet service provider. Sounds like nothing to worry about, but, you know, run little snitch. Keep an eye. You know, we used to think the Mac had no malware. I probably even foolishly said that on this show some years ago, not recently. But we know, in fact, that there is malware on the Macintosh. In fact, they discovered something called Fruit Fly a couple of weeks ago that had been sitting on a few hundred Macs for years. It was an old malware, probably custom written to target specific people because it was what we call a RAT, a remote access Trojan, that allowed a remote hacker to get into your computer, turn on the camera, turn on the microphone, watch what you're typing, watch what you're doing. Creepy, right? It was written in Perl, which is, you know, modern-day hackers probably not their first choice. It's probably a few years old. There, even the command and control servers were still, you know, around. Somebody looked at the code and said, oh, I see it's supposed to log into the server. The domain name had never been registered, so he registered it. And all of a sudden, 400 Macintoshes logged in and said, what is thy will, O my master? Whoa, creepy. We don't know where it came from. We don't know the means of infection. It's not something you have to worry about. But the point is, it could be done. It was doable. And it is on at least 400 computers out there. Maybe our last callers. So if you see weird network behavior, weird anomalies like this, little snitch, it's not free. I think you can try it for free. What it does is it just watches all outbound connections. At first, it's extremely annoying because it says, your router's trying to get online. Is that okay? And you say, yes, always allow my router. Oh, okay. Your calendar's trying to get online. Is that okay? Yes, always allow the calendar. And eventually, it'll calm down. And then you watch for stuff where you don't expect it. Something's trying to get online that you didn't expect. That's where little snitch, they'll snitch on them, and that's useful. 8888 Ask Leo. Oh, yeah, fruit fly. Yeah. In an apple. Get it? Moving on. Let's go to Tom in Warren, Ohio. Hey, Tom. Uh-oh. Tom, are you there? Hello, Tommy. We've talked before, so I know Tom exists. Oh, wait a minute. It's not Tom. Sorry, Tom. Something went weird with the phone, and it looks like I've got both Tom and G. Scott. Hi, G. Scott.
Okay. How about me? Am I on?
Yeah, you're on. Who are you?
This is Kevin in Malibu, Leo.
Of all of the lines in all the world, you came into mine. Hi, Kevin.
I'll take it, brother.
What can I do for you? I'm sorry. I'm confused. What can I do for you, Kevin?
Leo, your brilliance is needed.
Uh-oh. Well, let me go see if I can find it. I think I left it with my AOL disk. It's over here somewhere. Hey,
can I put in this technical stuff in the show notes, and you can, I mean, the IRC chat, and you can actually look at that stuff?
Sure. I see the IRC chat, irc.twit.tv.
Okay.
It doesn't help all the people listening, but...
It's listed under Malibu, and here's the question.
Yeah.
Is this exchange okay for our dead AC adapter of our laptop Toshiba satellite?
So you have a Toshiba laptop, and the adapter went bad.
Correct.
And instead of getting it from Toshiba, which is in generally the right thing to do, you know, this is fortunately something that's going by the wayside. It's the same with phones. In the early days, every phone had a proprietary adapter. You had to get the right adapter for your Nokia 3310 or whatever it was. Over time, we moved, and it, primarily thanks to the EU here on this one, because they made laws that said you can't do that. You have to have an adapter that's universal. So first it was micro USB. Increasingly, we're seeing Type-C adapters offered on all phones. Same thing with laptops. They're now moving to Type-C adapters, too. I just got my new Lenovo Macintoshes. You charge them with a standard Type-C adapter. That's great. You don't have to get some proprietary adapter. But those Toshibas have a special little plug. Now, you don't have to get it from Toshiba. You're not required to.
Thank you.
But always be careful when you're talking power about getting stuff from no-name entities on eBay.
Because... Well, this was actually, I had a IBM adapter sitting around.
Oh, did it work?
It is working, but if you look at the text that I showed you there, it's different sizes. I'll just say
yeah, so here's what you're looking at. On somewhere written in fine, hard-to-read print, it will say the polarity of the adapter. You know, it'll have a little ring and a dot in it, and it'll have a plus and a minus. It'll say what the amperage and the voltage is. It'll tell you exactly the specifics of that adapter. That's the one you should use with it.
Right.
On the other hand, if you have an adapter lying around and it charges it.
Well, here's the deal. The original one was 19 volts. This IBM one is 16 volts.
So it'll charge it slower.
Okay, but it'll work and it's not going to hurt anything. The battery won't.
Yeah, I'd be careful about overcharging it, but I think undercharging it as you're doing is probably okay.
It looks like the battery's not really charging, but staying static. It's not running either.
Yeah, that's probably right. It's not enough volt. It's not enough wattage to increase the battery. It just keeps it going.
Okay, yeah. But at least I can turn this on, download everything until I get it.
Yeah, if you're for short term use, that's fine.
Leo, you are fantastic. I hope you have a great day there.
Thanks.
At Aluma. I got to tell you that your revolving crowd there, Roberto Baldwin, is always entertaining. Thank you.
Isn't Roberto great?
Yeah.
He writes for Engadget now, but you know why he's fun is because he used to work for TMZ, the gossip channel. So he's a tech journalist now, but he adds a little pizzazz to everything he writes.
He's not sticking that same...
No, he's fun.
He's in a different geek world.
Oh, I'm glad you like him. I appreciate it. Thanks for the kind words. He's talking about our podcast. So, you know, I do the radio show, but that's not enough to keep a guy busy. So instead of enjoying 5 days off a week like any sane person would, I filled the rest of the days doing podcasts. And actually, it's been a nice little business. I do about 10 shows, 2 shows a day, 5 days a week. You'll find them on our podcast network, twit.tv. T-W-I-T stands for This Week in Tech. I know what you're thinking, but no, it stands for This Week in Tech, twit.tv. And the show he's talking about is called This Week in Tech. It's a weekly couple-hour roundtable about the tech news. And we have a rotating group of people who come on the show, like Roberto from Engadget, who are just great. So I will be very grateful if you'd listen. Actually, this week we're going to talk to – in fact, you should stick around, Abby. We're going to talk to your favorite novelist, Rob Reed. His first book was Year Zero, a great story about aliens and their love for American music. They were listening, I guess, on their alien radios, but they listened so much they racked up quite a bill for royalties. And it's a very funny sci-fi story. His newest came out this week. It's a really great send-up of Silicon Valley called After On, and artificial intelligence and a sentient being that turns out, oh, I don't want to spoil it for you, she's not malicious. She's just kind of bratty. Anyway, Rob Reed, R-E-I-D, will be one of our roundtable guests on Twit this afternoon. But in any event, I mentioned that because his book is so great. Highly recommend After On. 8888 Ask Leo. I think we have one more segment. Let's keep going before we wrap this thing up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And, while I'm here, a little tip of the hat to somebody saying they love the music that in between on the show. That's this guy right here, Michael Cozio, my musical director. He leads our orchestra, the tech guy orchestra. Thank you, Michael. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I forgot. Rob's going to be here. If you want to see him, he'll be here in an hour. You don't have to stick around, but if you do, you can just say hi. Do you have somewhere to be? Oh, well, stick around. It's nice to have you.
It's fun.
Is it? You don't get to see me work that often.
Never.
No.
I don't know why.
Never. 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 Yeah, he created Listen.com, which invented Rhapsody, which along with free CDs from AOL has kind of gone by the wayside. But there you go. NS Lookup Maria. That's a good idea. That's a great idea. See what happens. Okay, everybody. Hammer time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Got to get my parachute pants on here. 88, or are those harem pants? What are they? What are those called, Kim Schaffer? Those harem pants or parachute pants?
Oh, I go parachute. I've never heard of harem pants.
Yeah, all right. I'm going to call them parachute pants, too.
Hammer pants.
Hammer time. Everybody knows hammer pants.
Hammer pants.
He looks like the genie in Aladdin.
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
I used to have those pants.
No, really?
I had pairs of pants like that back in those days.
Doctor.
Not quite as big and baggy as his, but they had.
Oh, by the way, I got the wrong song. That was Super Freak by Rick Super James. What am I talking about? I thought it was Hammer Time. I wanted to do Hammer Time.
Same tune.
I think it is the same tune. Am I wrong?
It's the same tune.
Okay. Sorry, Rick. Oh, no, I can't apologize to him either. It's over. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, back to the phones. Thank you, Kim. Parachute pants, but Rick does not wear parachute pants. Now we get to G. Scott in Minnesota. Hi, G. Scott. Sorry about that.
Hey, no problem. Good day to you.
Dun-dun-dun-dun, dun-dun-dun-dun. It's hammer time. It's the same. It's the same lick. What can I do for you, G. Scott?
Well, you can help get my life organized.
Oh, dear.
You're
talking to the wrong guy.
Well, okay. You know, listening to you, I'm pretty good about backing up. The problem is organizing it. I've got three or four external hard drives.
Yeah.
I've got three or four old laptops, and I have so many redundant files.
Of course, you've got duplicates all over the place, but here is my attitude on this. I'm in the same boat. In fact, every once in a while, I'll be going through stuff, and I'll find an old hard drive, and I'll say, well, what's this? And I'll look, and it's got all my old files from 1989 on it or whatever. I used to worry about that. I don't. I gave up. Don't worry about it. It's great. You have many copies. That increases the likelihood that if you lose something, you can find it again. What you really care about, I think people with computers can get kind of obsessive compulsive, you know. Oh, no, it's got to be all tidy and neat. And I think it's good just to let go of that, because the risk is you'll delete something that you don't have another copy of, right? So rather than that, what you really want is a ground truth, a copy that is the definitive copy, and all the rest are just extras. And one way to assure that is just to make a new backup of all your stuff and put that in the closet and put a date on it and say, this is the ground truth from August 6th, 2017.
Okay, and I've done that. I've got, you know, since probably 08, 011, 014, 016. Biggest thing for me that's a little bit of a headache is music. I've got, you know.
Yeah, this is a bigger one.
18,000 files.
This is a bigger one.
Probably
right.
10 or 12,000 songs.
What you'd really like, so the 6,000 duplicates. What you'd really like is just the one copy of everything. And then you can have backups, fine, but especially online. It doesn't matter what's offline, but online you want to make sure you have one and exactly one, not one or two or three or four of each song, and not zero either.
Right.
So
right.
There are dedupers. Are you on Windows or Mac?
I'm on Windows.
So there are, I think one of this, so there are a number of programs that will just dedupe. If you're looking for deduplicating, and this could be songs, it could be anything, very important to pick something that is smart enough not to really make sure it's a duplicate, right? So you don't want programs, and I've seen them, that delete the live copy of a studio song because that's the same song. No, it's not. It's different. It's different performances, so that's not the same. Even if the name's the same, the artist is the same. What you want is something that will actually look at the contents of the file. Do a hash is what we call it. That will be a unique number based on the contents of the file, and then unless the hashes match exactly, that's not a duplicate. And there are a number of things to do this. One of my favorite Windows music programs might be a good solution for you. It's called Monkey's Audio. Do you know this program?
I don't.
It does a lot of things. It's a compressor. It's a library. Is this the one I want? No, maybe it isn't the one I want. Maybe it's... Maybe I'm thinking of the ape. Monkey and ape. I confuse them. What am I thinking of? Chat room is going to help. Media monkey. Thank you.
Media monkey.
That's the one I'm thinking. I confuse apes, monkeys, media monkeys. They're all chimpanzees. So Media Monkey is a very nice media library. It's kind of like iTunes, only better. But one of the things it will do is fix up your collection. It'll go out. It'll correctly name and organize the files, put all the cuts from one album into a single folder. It will find duplicate tracks and missing tags. In other words, it's really, besides being really a fabulous library management tool, it is a cleanup tool par excellence. And I'm glad the chat room remembered the name. Thank you, Gollum. Media Monkey. Media Bonobo. MediaMonkey.com. Supports Android, which is nice, so you can sync to an Android phone. It will also back up to an iPhone and sync with an iPhone. It will read your iTunes information if you have it. It does encoding. It pretty much does everything you want. There's a free version, and if you're willing to pay $25, there's a version that does even more. But I think the key in here is it finds duplicate tracks, but even better than that, it will organize your stuff and put album art in there, make sure the naming is consistent, all of that stuff. It's something really useful.
That's what you want. Like what I'm looking for.
Yeah, that's what you want. Yeah, you want it that will take
favorites together. Yeah.
Because we all have this
in a row.
Exactly, we have this pile of music, and what we'd like is all the songs in an album to be in a folder with the consistent naming and the artist and the title and all that stuff. And this is what that does. It does it by identifying the song. It uses things like CDDB and FreeDB to look up the information. It gets the album art through AllMusic and Amazon. And so it's really a good tool. I love this. Tinker Toy Tech was the first to say the name. So I think well worth the $25, but the free version does all of this, all the stuff we just talked about as well.
Cool. Yeah, I think I'll have to try it. The other files, my business, I am glad to have redundancy there.
Yes, exactly.
The music is,
it's music and photographs. It's media files that drive people crazy. You don't want to have duplicate photographs. You don't want to have duplicate music.
Exactly.
Thanks, G. Scott. Nice to talk to you. Media Monkey. It's at MediaMonkey.com. Don't go to Media Chimpanzee. That's another site entirely. I can't believe it. The time goes so fast. It's nice to talk to you, G. Scott. I'm sorry I'm not going to get to you, Tom in Warren, Ohio, because I only got about 30 seconds left. Not enough time. He says he wants to use a Chromebook with photography. It is a little more challenging on a Chromebook. There's a great photo editor that is a Chrome extension called Polar, P-O-L-A-R-R. But honestly, for the kind of photography I do, and I bet you do too, I have to use a Mac or a PC. Maybe Linux with Darktable. I need programs like Lightroom, Photo Mechanic to organize my library, and I don't know if anything will do it on Chromebook. I really don't. I'm sorry to say. Except Google Photos. If Google Photos is enough, then you're good. Thanks to Kim Schaffer for answering the phones today. Thanks to our musical director, Mike Cozio. Most importantly, I am so glad you were here. Thanks to you for joining me. And I do hope you'll come back and we can talk more high tech. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Don't forget techguylabs.com for more information, and we'll see you next time. Have a great Geek Week. It for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I can go on and on. And on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.